From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Essential Quality is still driving at him from the outside, past the 16th pole. Highly motivated, Essential Quality, what a finish! The champ remains unbeaten, Essential Quality, to win it for Luis Saez.
It's Rock Your World in command, Medina Spirit making no progress, and it's going to be Rock Your World to take them all the way in the run-happy Santa Anita Derby. He's undefeated and wins by four under Roberto Rispoli.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Known Agenda is now on to take over the lead. It's Known Agenda and Irad Ortiz Jr. now moving away from Soup and Sandwiches back to second. Then Greatest Honor and Nova Rags. 16th to go. It's Pletcher in the Derby again. It's Known Agenda for St. Elias Stable under Irad Ortiz Jr. 2.5 clear.
Superstock has taken over the lead. Concert Tour has been defeated. Superstock, Ricardo Santana win the Arkansas Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, the Kentucky Derby will be here soon enough, and each of those three-year-olds figure to have a major say in the outcome just 14 days from today. 14 days until the Run for the Roses, 13 days until the ladies
now,
take center stage in the Run for the Lilies, and just a little over 9 hours away from a huge showdown in the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network. It is, of course, the Equine Forum, and it is right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to be with you for the next 3 hours this morning, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And for those of us who have seen our Derby fever frantically climb to levels that would most definitely be considered off the charts the past few weeks with the plethora of major Derby preps, this is a week to chill. It really is. Check your pulse, your heart rate, your blood pressure, take your temperature maybe, and make sure that everything is back in line because it's going to get crazy. Things will ramp up again very, very soon. And that doesn't mean you're not going to hear plenty of Derby talk on today's show. We're not going that far. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. Byron King, who publishes his weekly Derby Dozen on Blood Horse, will join me in a few minutes around 8:15 to tell you which horses he considers to be contenders and which will have the look of a pretender 14 days from today. Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez is going to be with me in the second hour of the show right around 9:20, and trainer Todd Pletcher will be here at the end of the program at 10:40 Eastern. Now, Johnny will be aboard Medina Spirit for Bob Baffert in the Kentucky Derby. He's hoping to recapture, they're hoping together to recapture some of that authentic magic from a year ago. And then there's Todd Pletcher. Todd Pletcher is expected to saddle at least four horses, and that's probably going to be the likely number, but at least four horses in the Run for the Roses. Florida Derby winner Known Agenda, his 1-2 finishers from the Wood Memorial, Bourbonic and Dynamic One, and Sainthood, who was runner-up in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. And if all of that holds true, and all of those horses indeed make it to the starting gate, it will be the sixth time that he has saddled four or more horses in the Kentucky Derby. Think about that. We all know Todd Pletcher tends to bring a lot of horses to the Derby. That's what his program is geared to do. But over the years, we've seen those horses go on and do big things later in the season, too. Breeders' Cup Classics, for example. Vino Rosso comes to mind. And how much different is our view of Todd Pletcher now that he has now won two Kentucky Derbies as compared to earlier in his career when he had continuously had to answer the questions about his 0-for-24 record in the Derby? Remember that? I can remember all of the media members gathered around his barn at Churchill Downs, and that was the question that kept coming up going into the 2010 Kentucky Derby. 0-for-24. But he finally broke through that year with Super Saver. And now we have a completely different perception when Todd brings his Todd squad to the Derby. He's still saddled over 50 horses in the Kentucky Derby. He's won it twice. It's not like that's a tremendous win percentage. But he's now a two-time Kentucky Derby winner. And we know how difficult it is just to get a horse to the starting gate, to get one horse to the starting gate each year. Todd Pletcher consistently gets multiple horses to the Kentucky Derby. And now he's won it twice. And don't you find, too, that at this time of year, the Oaks fillies never get their due? They just don't. There's so much attention paid to the Kentucky Derby that the ladies often get a bit of a raw deal. Well, I'm not going to let that happen. I'm not going to let that happen this morning or in the next couple of weeks, because we're going to have plenty of Kentucky Oaks discussion and conversation. Of course, we are your official radio home of the Kentucky Oaks. We'll be there with 3 hours of Oaks Day coverage, 3 to 6 Eastern, all the way through the Run for the Lilies on Friday. That's the, by the way, the last Friday in April. You know, the Derby is as early as it could possibly be this year, being on May 1st. So with the first Saturday in May falling on May 1st, that means that the Oaks falls on the last Saturday in April, but that's when we'll be there. We'll be there with all that coverage for you, 3 to 6 Eastern. We've done that for many, many years. And Todd is going to send out his undefeated Ashland Stakes winner, Malathot, in the Oaks. Just one horse. That's it. It's like a day off for Todd Pletcher. He can do that with his eyes closed, right? I'm also going to talk about the Kentucky Oaks with trainer Ken McPeak at 9 o'clock Eastern. Kenny will send out his Gulfstream Park Oaks winner. That's Crazy Beautiful and potentially Simply Ravishing, but I'm not sure she's going to make it after a very disappointing outing in the Ashland 2 weeks ago. And it's a big day today for Ken McPeak. His barn sends out Swiss Skydiver, who squares off with Monomoy Girl in the Apple Blossom. That's at Oaklawn, and what a showdown that's going to be. You know, Monomoy Girl, she's a monster. She is just that good, and she continues to dominate every time she goes to the racetrack. Swiss Skydiver is the, let's call her the heir apparent in that division. But now we get the two of them together in what promises to be an epic renewal of the Apple Blossom. It's Swiss Skydiver, I think, is viewed, and even the morning line will show you that. Monomoy Girl is a heavier favorite than Swiss Skydiver, even though Swiss Skydiver is 2-1. It's not like she's 20-1. But Swiss Skydiver is that super talented, up-and-coming, rock star athlete that is now going up against the best of the best. And if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. That's the task facing Swiss Skydiver later today. But that should be a lot of fun to watch. Ken McPeak also sends out Crafty Daddy, who will try to take down today's Grade 2 Elkhorn at Keeneland. So he's got a lot of action today. He'll have plenty of action coming up over the next couple of weeks. So Kenny going to be with me 9 o'clock Eastern. Here is the full menu for today's show. And again, it is going to be very, very busy, as it is every Saturday morning. Byron King coming up in just about 6 or 7 minutes from right now. He's with Bloodhorse. He will preview his latest Derby dozen. 8:30, we'll get you ready to make a wager with today's first bet. At 8:53, our Industry Star of the Week segment, which is presented every week by Stuart Morris. 9 o'clock, again, trainer Kenny McPeak will be here. 9:20, it is our Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, followed by a visit with Hall of Fame jockey Johnny V. He'll be with me probably 9:25 or so. 9:40, a brand new edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. That's become one of the more popular segments on this program. You won't want to miss it. Talking with another individual in our sport that oftentimes I think goes overlooked. And without them, with this person in particular, our sport can't succeed. That's Unsung Heroes, 9:40. 10 o'clock, we go in the room with Sean Clancy. He sits down for what was an amazing one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with retired jockey Ramon Dominguez. It aired 3 or 4 weeks ago here on the show. It is one of my favorite in-the-room segments. So candid. Ramon Dominguez opens up to Sean. And there are things that he tells him that I've never heard Ramon discuss publicly. So make sure you're locked in there at 10 o'clock Eastern. 10:30, Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history. That segment presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:40, I will welcome 2021 Hall of Fame nominee Todd Pletcher to the show. He'll take a closer look at his Oaks and Derby hopefuls. So a lot of things coming your way. Very, very busy program. Question of the day, you can go to at HRRN on our Twitter feed, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. Everybody has that moment. I tell you my story quite often. I was engaged to my wife when Real Quiet won. That was the year that I got engaged. Took a limo over, had the ring burning a hole in my pocket, got my bets in before I asked her so I could get that out of the way. Had to get the bets in because I didn't know where it was going to go afterwards. Found a place to do it. We did it. That's one that'll always be very special to me. So share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Mike@horseracingradio.net is the way you can send your memories to me and email the show. Fun show coming up. It kicks off with Byron King talking Derby Dozen. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oaks Duds Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oaks Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
Highly motivated, has the lead, coming toward the quarter pole. Essential Quality, second on the outside. Still a half length separate the top two, and they've opened up by seven lengths off the turn to Hidden Stash, who swings wide in third. Here comes Essential Quality now, taking aim once again at Highly Motivated, who still has the lead coming into the final furlong of the Toyota Bluegrass. Highly Motivated with the advantage. Essential Quality is still driving at him from the outside past the 16th pole. Highly Motivated, Essential Quality, what a finish! The champ remains unbeaten. Essential Quality to win it for Luis Saez.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pennant, Baron of the Backstretch. Kurt Becker had the call of the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland. Just a couple weeks ago, Essential Quality remaining undefeated. Had to fight for it. We haven't seen him have to do that in that fashion throughout his career. Probably a good test. Brad Cox, his trainer, said, I'm glad that he got a test. You know, it's kind of like a team that is dominating going into the NCAA basketball tournament, and all of a sudden they get that game where they have to come down to the wire, or they go to overtime and they almost get beat. Maybe it's in the conference tournament. Very, very similar. You'll hear coaches talk about, it was good that we got tested. We needed to know what it was like to have to fight to win. Same thing with essential quality. I think Brad Cox feels the same way. He continues to be the number one ranked horse in the Derby point standings, and he certainly is the number one ranked horse for trainer Byron King from the Blood Horse and his Derby Dozen. And Byron with me now here on the Equine Forum. Byron, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How are you? I tell you, I really enjoyed listening to Kurt's call there of the Bluegrass. What a great call he delivered there. He's such a fine announcer. I think, it's fun to sometimes just hear the call of a race as opposed to watching the video, too. You really get to see the skill these guys have.
Yeah, and a guy like Kurt Becker, now I've known Kurt for many years. He's part of our broadcast team and will be again this year for the Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup. But, you know, he's so talented. And I can remember, and I've told this story many times on air, I've actually played it. I played the clip from our broadcast years ago when Dame Dorothy was running in the Humana Distaff for Bobby Flay. And we went to the call of the race. There was no audio coming through. And we were sitting at Churchill Downs in our broadcast booth. Kurt reached over, hadn't looked at a horse, hadn't looked at a silk. He reached over, he grabbed his binoculars so nonchalantly, and he went and called that race so perfectly without having ever looked at a silk or a horse or memorized a name. It was flawless, and it just shows you the skill that a guy like Kurt Becker has.
Wow, that's amazing. He's really such a talented, talented guy, and I think Keeneland fans are lucky to hear him, and obviously he got to call a great horse, as you mentioned earlier, Essential Quality. You know, I think he clearly heads into the Kentucky Derby as the favorite, and, flawless, perfect record, a two-year-old champion coming in top form. And surprisingly, Brad Cox's first Derby starter. That's kind of hard to believe, as dominant as he has been in recent years, but of course, his star has been on the rise in recent years.
Yeah, and he's looking to have a few horses in the Derby this year, trying to emulate as best he can Todd Pletcher with running multiple horses in the Kentucky Derby. But Essential Quality is his star. There's no doubt about it. He's the horse that everybody will have their eye on. Byron, how big of a favorite do you think he will be?
Gee, that's a good question. I would say in the vicinity of 3-1 would be my guess. It's very predicting the betting in the Derby, I think, is one of the, it's almost as hard as picking the winner. You know, there are some horses that really catch on, and there are others that obviously, a great example is from a few years back when horse Patch ran. He was so popular and really got bet down below his what you would have guessed would have been his odds, because people fell for his story and wanted to see him perform well. So it's kind of a tricky call. Of course, too, we also have 20 horses in the race, so that spreads out the betting. But if I had to guess, I'd say about 3-1 would be the ballpark I would put him in.
Woo. Now that's a heavy favorite, considering, you know, we're looking at a 20-horse field, and that's a lot of money coming in on Essential Quality. And I was thinking it might be a little bit higher just because of that fact that you have so many horses in there, and there are other horses that on their day have proven that they can run a race that would rival a horse like Essential Quality, but Essential Quality has been the most consistent of any of the contenders, and that's why he is number one. At number two, you have the Florida Derby winner, Known Agenda, and he certainly ran a big race down in the Sunshine State.
He did, and this is a horse that was really underachieving before Pletcher added blinkers to his equipment. Since then, he's rattled off two straight wins, both at Gulfstream, which of course is where Pletcher runs the bulk of his horses during the winter months. But this is a horse that has really gotten its act together. He worked Friday at Churchill Downs, had a nice workout. Pletcher brought all of his prospective starters, four of them, into Churchill Downs, well in advance of the Derby, a good 2.5-plus weeks before the race. Let them have a couple of works over the track, and I think clearly he heads into Kentucky as a major, major contender.
I love your number three selection. You know, history be damned. Forget about Grindstone being the last horse to win the Louisiana Derby and win the Kentucky Derby. That was in 96. There's only been two horses to ever do it. But Hot Rod Charlie sits in the third position for you.
Yeah, you know, and this was a horse that I flopped from a week past. You know, he was a horse that I guess what I like about him a little bit as we get closer to the race is there's just so much apparent speed in this year's Kentucky Derby that I think his versatility will serve him well. He won the Louisiana Derby on the lead, but this is a horse that has run from well off the pace, sometimes, you know, just from a stalking pace too, position, I should say. And he's just very versatile. So I think that will serve him well. I think he's, he can grab a good position. Flavian Pratt is going to ride him with Joel Rosario sticking on Concert Tour. Now, I think some people might go, oh, well, Rosario's choosing the other horse, but I think part of that has to do with, you know, sticking with Baffert, and Baffert, of course, is the trainer of Concert Tour. So I wouldn't read too much in that, and obviously Pratt is, you know, he won the Kentucky Derby via disqualification on Country House and has been just riding lights out in California.
Talking with Byron King from Blood Horse, you can go to bloodhorse.com to see his complete Derby dozen. We're walking through them now as well, but if you want to read more in-depth information on each of his selections, you can go ahead and do that. And I say selections, they're not necessarily selections at this point, Byron, more just prospective rankings as to how you see the top horses coming in to this year's Kentucky Derby. And number four is Rock Your World, the Santa Anita Derby winner. I said on this program last week when John Sadler was joining me that he is all of a sudden, because of the fact he's gone turf to dirt and was successful on both, he's drawing a lot of comparisons to Big Brown, to Barbaro. Are those comparisons fair?
I think they are fair in the sense of, you know, he's a horse that has shown the versatility that they did. Actually, probably he's closer to Barbaro in the sense that, you know, Barbaro came into the Kentucky Derby having won on dirt. Animal Kingdom was very much a question mark when he came. He had previously won on synthetic at Turfway Park, and those are two good examples of these kind of turf horses that have transitioned to Derby success. I guess the big question mark, and the one reason why I ended up moving Hot Rod Charlie in front of Rock Your World, is, you know, they decided to send Rock Your World to the front in the Santa Anita Derby, and understandably so, since he had never run on the dirt before. They weren't sure how he would handle kickback in his face, and why not take advantage of a draw toward the inside. But should they try that again, I think you're going to be looking at a very hot pace, and then the alternative is he could be facing still some different circumstances that he hasn't before. So, you know, how would he react to rating? How would he react to potentially dirt in his face? Those are great unknowns, and he is short of experience with only three starts under his belt. Now, all those things said, you know, he's perfect. He's got a great record. He won the Santa Anita Derby, and horses out of California have excelled in this race. Horses that have been winter-based in California have won six of the last nine Kentucky Derbies.
Yeah, and thanks to Justify a few years back, he won't have to worry about the curse of Apollo anymore, considering the fact that he didn't make his debut until 2021, although it was on New Year's Day, so it was as close to 2020 as you could possibly get.
Right.
Yeah, Rock Your World. And, you know, you talk about his ability to rate. You look at his two turf races, and he's a quick horse. His debut was at six furlongs on that New Year's Day race, and they went 21-3 for the opening quarter. He was just a half a length off of that pace at that point. So he has plenty of early zip. But in his second start at a mile, he sat just off the pace in second. And he has shown the ability to rate. But you're right. The big question is, it's different. How will he handle a kickback? How will he handle a bigger field? And then, you know, there's the mental aspect to all of this too, right, Byron? How many times have we seen a horse come over and get completely washed out on the walkover in the paddock? You won't have 150,000 fans as we've had in the past, but there will be some fans, and it's a different atmosphere for so many of these horses.
Right, and this is a horse, too, that all three of his starts, he's merely had to go from his stall at Santa Anita Park over to the front side. You know, this will be the first time he's, you know, getting on a plane, going to a different track. All those kinds of things can rattle a horse. It doesn't mean they're absolutely certain to to run poorly as a result of it, but it just throws a curveball at them, you know? So the question is can they hit it or not, you know? But I think those have to be considerations for the people that say, hey, I'm going to back Rock Your World in the Derby. And certainly he is facing some definite challenges. I don't think there's any doubt. But this is also a very, very good horse. I mean, he set a fast pace in the Santa Anita Derby and just kept running and beat a very good horse in Medina Spirit. And, you know, it's the Santa Anita Derby has also been a rather key prep over the years, particularly over the last 10 or so.
Yeah, unquestionably. A lot of people will be off the Medina Spirit bandwagon. He has one win this year. That came in the Robert B. Lewis Stakes. Since then, he was second in the San Felipe behind his stablemate, who is not here. That's Life is Good. He's off the trail. And Rock Your World in the Santa Anita Derby. You're still buying Medina Spirit. He's ranked high for you. He's still in the fifth position. How come you like him so much?
I guess, well, one big reason is Bob Baffert. I mean, he has won six Kentucky Derbies. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, he could stand alone if he wins his seventh. And also, this is a guy in Baffert that has won the Derby before with horses that didn't necessarily win their final preps. I mean, both Silver Charm and Real Quiet won the Derby after finishing second in the Santa Anita Derby, as this horse will try to do. I just think he's honest. You know, he gives a good account. I was slightly disappointed with his Santa Anita Derby. I thought that maybe he could have made up more ground than he did. But at the same time, I think when you just look at his whole body of work, I mean, he's never been worse than second. He's run against some of his defeats have been behind Life is Good, who, as we, you know, you alluded to earlier, was, you know, such a fine shining star for Baffert and probably would have been right up there with Essential Quality for favoritism had he, you know, stayed healthy and on the trail. So I think this horse is kind of sneaky good. He kind of reminds me a lot of Real Quiet, who also was a very modest purchase at auction, who went on to obviously success winning the Kentucky Derby in 1998.
Your sixth ranked horse is Concert Tour, another Bob Baffert trainee, and a horse that just finished third behind Cattle River and Superstock. Flip it around the other way, actually, Superstock and Cattle River in that Arkansas Derby. You're still high on Concert Tour, too, though. You have him ranked above both of those horses.
Right, I do. That said, to me, he was disappointing in the Arkansas Derby. He did press a hot pace, which set the stage for Superstock to run well. But at the same time, I felt like if he was really a top-five prospect, he would have at least held second in the race. And he allowed Cattle River to come back and pass him for the runner-up spot. So that was a race that I felt, you know, left a little to be desired. At the same time, I'm keeping the faith given his prior excellence and the fact that Bob Baffert trains him. But I do have question marks about him staying, given that he tired late in the Arkansas Derby and now is stretching out another furlong to run the mile and a quarter of the Kentucky Derby. It will be interesting to me what they decide to do with him. Will they decide to send him to the lead as they did in the Rebel when he won off by, you know, open lengths? Or will they try to be a pace presser as they did in the Arkansas Derby, but that didn't work? So if there was less speed in the race, I think I would like him a little bit more, but boy, if he has to make the front, he's going to have to really fly.
Yeah, there will be some speed. There's going to be plenty of early zip in this year's Kentucky Derby. You're giving a lot of love to the Louisiana Derby because your number 7 ranked horse and your number 8 ranked horse both come out of that race. Mandaloon, who was very dull, ran 6th in the Louisiana Derby. Midnight Bourbon, who is in the 8th position for you, he's a horse that was runner-up behind Hot Rod Charlie, but Mandaloon at number 7, very intriguing to me. You're still somewhat high on him.
Yeah, and this was, and I have to admit with you, you know, as we do these kinds of derby rankings, whether it's me or anybody else, you know, the easiest ones are those first three or four. It's easy to really say, oh, I really like this horse and this horse. But as you get down to that bottom part of the dozen, or, you know, even for some of those that go through all 20, boy, it's splitting hairs between some of those at the bottom part of it. And you're right. I am kind of, you know, sticking my neck out a little bit on the Louisiana Derby because it has not been a productive prep or as productive as other ones over the years. I mean, it's been a long time. You look at a race like, you know, the Florida Derby's produced 24 Derby winners, and, you know, the Louisiana Derby has produced four. So, I mean, in very few recently. I mean, you have to go back to Grindstone and so forth. But Mandaloon, strung by Brad Cox, as you mentioned, he has multiple horses or potentially multiple horses this year. And this horse won the Risen Star, looked really good in winning that race. And he just kind of reminds me a lot of War of Will from a couple years ago, who bombed in the Louisiana Derby after winning the Risen Star. But then he bounced back, ran a very competitive race in the Kentucky Derby in the rather interference Kentucky Derby of Maximum Security's year. And then after that, won the Preakness. So I think this horse is still legit. The fact that a really sharp trainer is keeping him on the Derby trail and not, you know, going to more conservative placement leads me to believe that, you know, he still has faith in this horse, and I'm going to keep it too.
There have been four total winners to come out of the Louisiana Derby. You mentioned Grindstone, the last to win both. Then before that, it was Black Gold in 1924. Those are the only two Louisiana Derby winners to wear the roses. You did have Funny Side, who was second in the Louisiana Derby in 2003, and Country House, who was, of course, put up on disqualification in the Derby back in 2019. He was fourth in the Louisiana Derby. So there have been four horses to do it. We'll see if Mandaloon can somehow find a way to reverse his form and pull it off, or maybe Hot Rod Charlie can join Grindstone and Black Gold. Superstock at number 9. At number 10, Byron King has Highly Motivated. At number 11, it's Soup and Sandwich. And number 12, Dynamic One. Again, bloodhorse.com is where you can read all of his analysis of all of those horses. Byron, just about set to get to another commercial break here, but before I let you go, what are the couple of things, or maybe the one thing, you're going to hope to see from these Derby contenders over the next 2 weeks when they're on the track at Churchill or wherever they're coming from to make you feel like, okay, I've got them in the right order, and I have some confidence and conviction in my rankings?
I guess what I would like to see from them would be, you know, obviously very promising workouts in which they are willing on their own, not having to be nudged along by their riders, things of that nature. Now, every horse is a little bit different. There are some that are eager workhorses and others that are not, but I think I would want to see that from them. I think I would also naturally want to see a good draw on Derby Day. You know, we've got, last year was the first year of the Kentucky Derby starting gate with the full 20 horses across. Of course, it was not 20 horses last year. We had a smaller field, but that will eliminate perhaps the bumping that used to cause between the auxiliary gate and the main gate in years past. Perhaps, we'll see. But I still wouldn't want to draw the rail in the Kentucky Derby, that's for sure. So that would be one that would send one of my top picks quickly going down the rankings. But I would just say those kinds of things, to see some promising workouts and a good draw and a favorable pace setup.
He's Byron King. His Derby Dozen, again, at bloodhorse.com. Byron, really appreciate you walking through some of the contenders with me. All the best over the next 2 weeks, and good luck on Derby Day.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Mike, and best to all you guys, and continued great coverage.
All right, still to come, your first bet, that is today's first bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, and then a loaded hour two, and even more loaded, hour three, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
In early August of 1919, Samuel D. Riddle's big chestnut two-year-old Man-O-War captured his sixth straight race, and continuing on unbeaten, carried 130 pounds, unheard of, by the way, of current racing practice, to that win in the $10,000 United States Hotel Stakes at Saratoga. The speed and stamina of Big Red had already become legendary, but there were horsemen who had reservations as to his ability to sustain his remarkable speed over a distance of ground. And those self-same doubters felt there would be a real test in his forthcoming scheduled races, the Sanford and the Hopeful, when he would face the very best two-year-olds in training at the time. The son of Fair Play was a veritable giant, standing better than 16 hands and weighing in at nearly 1,100 pounds. He looked more like a four-year-old rather than a two-year-old. Oh, there were challengers to his credentials, all right. Trainer Jimmy Rowe had two in a Wild Air and Upset, although Man of War had whipped Upset in the aforementioned United States Hotel. And then there was Miss Jemima. On Saturday, August 13, 1919, seven horses answered the call to post in the Sanford Memorial. One of the meeting's largest crowds, better than 20,000, were on hand to view the attempt of the Great Riddle two-year-old to remain unscathed. John Madden had had Captain Alcock in the field, and the most likely contenders were Golden Broom at 2-1 and Upset, who was 7-1. Man of War was the post-time odds-on choice for the betting public at 1-2. Golden Broom was the inside horse with Frankie Ambrose in the irons. Man of War was in post 6 with his regular rider Johnny Loftus in the saddle. Golden Broom acted up considerably both in the post parade and at the start, showing both his nervousness and his greenness. But when the flag dropped at the start, Golden Broom was away winging. By the time the field had gone a bare 16th of a mile, Ambrose had the speedy youngster 2 lengths in front. Upset, Harry Payne Whitney's fine juvenile, who was also away like a rocket, and settled into second place with Donna Connor third. Man of War had gotten away poorly, highly unusual for the Riddle standard bearer, almost being left at the post. By the time Loftus had Big Red settled into stride, he was sixth as the field hit the clubhouse turn. By the time the field swung off the turn into the stretch run, Golden Broom was still winging away clearly in front. Man of War had improved his position to third, cutting down the margin with every stride. It was Golden Brown by a length, Upset by an open two, and Man of War third. The rest of the field had given up the chase in mid-stretch, with Man of War second. Upset had Man of War by a length and a half at the 16th pole, and Loftus dug in on Big Red, asking Nicole for everything he had. 100 feet from the wire, the margin was 3 parts of a length, but Man of War was running out of real estate. Upset was hanging on tenaciously. As they hit the wire, it was Upset, the number 4 horse of Harry Payne Whitney, still a neck in front of Man of War, who was gaining slowly. Golden Brown had barely enough left to hang on for third. Captain Alcock finished fourth. The horse appropriately named Upset had indeed lived up to his moniker, and forever from that day on became part of a thoroughbred lore, legend, and mystique as the only horse ever to defeat Man of War. It all happened in the Sanford at Saratoga, August 13, 1919. A great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Eclipse champion Blame. Among sires with less than 10 crops, he has more Grade 1 winners than any stallion standing under $100,000, including Grade 1 winners Nadal, Marley's Freedom, Fault, Abscond, and French Classic winner Singa, plus these recent standout performers. With success on the track and with yearlings bringing up to $400,000, this proven son of Arch is truly a gold value stallion. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public by visiting santaanita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, and fans are asked to please wear your masks and to socially distance upon arrival. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Join us in person or online this Saturday, as our main event is the Grade II $200,000 Californian for older horses at a Milam 1/8. On Sunday, older horses will go a marathon Milam 1/2 in the Grade III Tokyo City Cup, and top sprinters will go 6.5 furlongs in the Grade III Kona Gold. First post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
This is jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As the field turns for home, Golden Principle, now Swiss Skydiver, has room, pounces on her at the eighth pole, and is hand-ridden to a comfortable lead as she waves goodbye, completely outclassing the field. It's Swiss Skydiver strolling through the stretch under Robbie Alvarado to win the Beholder Mile, loaded by 3.5. As time goes by, rallied smartly for second. Then Golden Principle, followed by Harvest Moon and this team.
Frank Miramonte bringing them home in the Beholder Mile. Swiss Skydiver making her 4-year-old debut, and she did it with style, winning easily. Now the waters get even deeper as she takes on the leader in that division, Monomoy Girl, who has been so brilliant. 14 of 16 times that she has gone to the post, she has won, has Monomoy Girl. And great to see her back in training for her 6-year-old year. She, of course, comes out of that big win in the Bayakoa at Oaklawn on February 28th and continues on a roll. And we'll see that showdown coming up in the Apple Blossom, Grade 1, 7:09 Eastern, 6:09 Central Time. And, of course, for those of you tuned in on the West Coast, you can catch it at 4:09 Pacific. Well, Ken McPeak, the trainer of Swiss Skydiver, is going to be with me coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. He will look ahead to his horses, not only coming up later today, but in the Kentucky Oaks as well. We'll talk a little Oaks with Kenny at 9 o'clock Eastern. Time now, though, to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in Race 9 at Oaklawn Park, the Grade 2 Oaklawn Handicap, 5:49 Eastern, 4:49 locally in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Number 2, Express Train, 5-2 on the morning line, has a 30% win projection from First Bet, rates 11 points higher than the next closest competitor in the race, would be an overlay price at 5-2 morning line odds based on probabilities. He won the San Pascual in his only try at the Oaklawn Handicap's 9-furlong distance. He was first or second in 5 of his last 6 starts, and John Sheriff's Barn is 4-9 since March 21st. Number 2, Express Train, in Race 9 at Oaklawn Park, is today's First Bet. And I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Just moments away from our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, I'm going to welcome trainer Robert Falcone for that segment, and he is truly an industry star, and especially this week That barn fire that took place, if you haven't heard about it, a barn fire broke out at Belmont Park, and Robert Falcone and several other trainers rushed in to help those, not just horses, but the people that were there. And I'm going to talk to Robert coming up about that in just about 5 minutes or so. He is a true industry star of the week and worthy of that segment here. Ken McPeak coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Johnny V will be with me, the Hall of Fame jockey, at 9:25. At 10 o'clock, a special replay of our In the Room segment with Sean Clancy, where he visits with Ramon Dominguez. That was a fantastic conversation, and that comes up at 10. At 10:27, Kurt Becker strolls through racing history, and at 10:40, Todd Pletcher will be here to look ahead to all of his Oaks and Derby horses. So a lot of things still to come. Question of the day, keep those responses coming. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. It could be something that's personal to you. It could be because your favorite horse won. It could be because you picked the cold superfecta. Whatever it is, let me know. Share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. I told you about mine when Real Quiet won, the year that my wife and I got engaged at the Kentucky Derby. That's probably number one on the list. I can also remember my wife and I sitting along the rail, about the 16th pole maybe. Nah, it was probably about the 8th pole. And we were sitting along the rail when Giacomo won. And I can remember how stupid I felt for not betting on Giacomo. I was in a pool with a good friend, John Gasper, and a bunch of other folks here in Lexington. And one of the horses that I lobbied to have in our trifecta that year was Giacomo. Well, we got to the Derby. We sat along the rail. Giacomo won. I did not have a nickel to win on him. Giacomo was the son of my all-time favorite horse, Holy Bull. I actually had a Holy Bull cap on the day that Giacomo won. Didn't have a nickel to win on Giacomo. Didn't have him in my Exacta wagers. I've never felt so deflated in my life after lobbying for a horse earlier in the week and then to not bet him. That's another one of my, well, I don't know if it's my favorite Kentucky Derby memory, but it's a day I'll never forget. So share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory, mike@horseracingradio.net, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right, so speaking of Kentucky Derby, we are going to be on site once again. It's so nice to be able to return to Churchill Downs again this year. All of our Derby coverage begins on Tuesday, April 27th with our popular Derby Countdown Show, the first of three that will be hosted once again from the backside media area. Interviews with owners, trainers, jockeys, handicappers, a report on the workouts after all the Oaks and Derby horses are on the track. Those shows are going to be hosted by Bobby Newman and Jude Feld. They are presented by our friends at Hillendale Farms. And you can tune in Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, beginning April 27th. On Friday, we segue into all of our coverage of the Kentucky Oaks. That comes your way from 3 to 6 Eastern. It's all presented by Twin Spires. And on Saturday, huge day, the Equine Forum, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern. Our Kentucky Derby undercard coverage from 3 to 5. And then Kentucky Derby 147 in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. We'll bring you that coverage beginning at 5 o'clock. So go to our website, horseracingradio.net. I know so many of you frantically writing that information down as I was walking through the times. But go to horseracingradio.net. It's all there for you. It's right there. You can see the entire schedule printed off, and make sure you're locked in and tuned in to us all week long here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as we get you ready for the run for the roses. All right, I'm going to get to one more quick break. When I come back, I welcome Robert Falcone, this week's Industry Star of the Week. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit. A $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga, Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of sire of sires, Taprit, to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew. There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune into Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
The most exciting 2 minutes in sports.
Mind that bird has won the Kentucky Derby. An impossible result here.
And it is all Barbaro in a sublime performance.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby. American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
The Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 1st, beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on HRRN.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Tenna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Busy show so far. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. It is time now for our weekly Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris. And as you know, Stuart offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. It won multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest. Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignments at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, this week's guest, trainer Robert Falcone, more than deserving of being an Industry Star of the Week, and I'm sure he'd be the first to tell you he is not the only one who deserves to be mentioned as an Industry Star of the Week, considering his efforts in helping save horses and people in what was a heroic effort in a barn fire that broke out at Belmont Park this past week, and he is with me now. Robert, first of all, congratulations on this honor. Wish it was under better circumstances, certainly, but congratulations to you. And more than congratulations, thank you for what you did to help everybody this past week.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Thanks for having me on, and thank you. I appreciate that. But as you said, there was a lot of people that could be the star of the week. You know, there's a lot of us that came together and did the best we can in a horrible situation.
Take me through the events that took place this past week.
Well, I was just getting ready to leave the barn, and it's actually one of my workers' birthdays, so we were all we had reservations to go to a place right near Belmont, so we stayed back a little bit later than we usually do. And I went to go get my truck because we were going to leave, and I parked in the kitchen right next to my barn. And as I was going to get my truck, I saw, you know, the barn smoking up a little bit. So I ran back to my barn and got all my guys and, you know, workers to come, you know, grab some shanks and halters. And we ran down to the barn and, you know, started helping.
How dire was the situation when you arrived at the barn?
It actually turned pretty bad pretty quick. When I first saw the smoke, I saw a couple. There's a few people in there that you know, Wayne was in there, and Wayne's workers were in there actually, and I saw them trying to you know, trying to put the fire out with a fire extinguisher, and a Naira security truck pulled up. But as far as how quick it escalated, it was pretty quick. I mean, I ran to my barn across the shed row, got my, you know, workers that were there, and came back and ran back. And by the time we got back and got in there, it was pretty bad smoke wise. That was the biggest problem, was all the smoke.
Yeah, and by the way, it was barn 60, and you mentioned Wayne. That's trainer Wayne Potts and trainer Jeffrey Engelhart, who had horses stabled in that barn. And as Robert Falcone is telling you, he arrived, it escalated quickly, the smoke was really bad. He and his team, and it wasn't just you, Robert, there were other trainers that were involved there, other horsemen who came by, and it was kind of all hands on deck, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. I mean, you could have gave the star of the week to a lot of people, you know. So I'll take it for everybody, you know. But yeah, I mean, we had so many people come back. It was when it first started, as you weren't really thinking as it was going on, you were just trying to get in, get out, you know, get more horses and get out. But when I sat back and looked at it, I would say it was around 9 o'clock at night, and take a little breather at first. And you look back and saw how many people were actually there that came to help. It was pretty, pretty incredible. You had blacksmiths, you had a jockey there, you had, you know, everyone's grooms, foremen, and excise riders came back, and outriders, feed companies, assistants. I mean, it was other trainers. I mean, it was pretty incredible to see how many people came back to help.
You even had the wherewithal, Robert, to make a post on Facebook telling folks to come help out if they were in the area.
Yeah, I figured when I first saw it, you know how fast, I was never in one, but you always hear, and you know, you always know how fast fires could spread in barns. I mean, it's the worst possible thing anyone would ever want, you know, is a barn fire. So when I first saw the smoke, as I was running back to my, you know, across the shed row to get my guys, I said, well, if I post it on social media, as soon as one person from the track sees it, you know, someone's bound to see it relatively quickly. I said, let me post it real quick and see what happens. And obviously, it really, as soon as I posted, the next night, there was call Juan Dominguez, who is the head of, you know, security over here at Naira. And I called Juan. I said, Juan, we need help. You got to call, you know, security. There's a barn on fire. So I figured between the post and calling Juan, you know, he got the word out, I got the word out, and people just started arriving, you know, extremely quickly.
Yeah, well, thank goodness that they did, and thank goodness that you were able to have the foresight to make a post like that. And thank you to you, and thank you to everybody that was involved in the rescue mission of those horses. Again, 58 horses were able to be saved in that barn fire this past week at Belmont. It is every trainer, every horseman's worst nightmare. And Robert, you and the folks at Belmont Park all came together to save lives and to make this as best of a situation as we possibly could. And really appreciate you taking a few minutes here this morning. Congratulations on being the industry star of the week. But next time, let's do it for winning a big race, okay?
Yeah, it sounds good to me. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
All right, thanks, man. That's trainer Robert Falcone. Yeah, horrific. Just absolutely horrific. And it could have been much, much worse if it wasn't for Robert Falcone, and all, and I want to emphasize that. It wasn't just Robert. He said he will be the spokesperson. He will take the Industry Star of the Week title. But that really goes to everybody who was involved in the rescue mission at Belmont Park this past week. So our thanks to them for sure. All right, second half of the program begins shortly. It kicks off with trainer Ken McPeak, who is going to talk about Swiss Skydiver today and the Apple Blossom. He'll look ahead to the Kentucky Oaks as well. All of that coming up right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. It'll be more of a Kentucky Derby update until the first Saturday in May, May 1st, for the 147th running of the Run for the Roses at historic Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. And this week, we'll focus on the jockey musical chairs. Ortiz Jr. has committed to Florida Derby winner Known Agenda. Palagafleone rides runner-up Soup and Sandwich, while Julian Leperu picks up the mount on Tampa Bay Derby winner Helium, the latter two for Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie. Finally, Mike Smith will ride Midnight Bourbon for fellow Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. Midnight Bourbon, recently second in the Louisiana Derby. In other Derby news, Churchill Downs officials were notified Thursday that Panadol, runner-up in the UAE Derby, will not be traveling to the U.S. for the Kentucky Derby. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back to Busy Equine Forum, rolling on, 14 days away from the Run for the Roses. As a matter of fact, if you are wondering exactly how far away we are, 14 days, 7 hours, 43 minutes, and 42 seconds until that Run for the Roses. That also means we are just 13 days away from the Run for the Lilies in the Kentucky Oaks, and just a little over 9 hours away, actually 8 hours now, edging ever closer to a huge, huge showdown in the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park between Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy Girl. Two champions going head-to-head to prove who's best. And that's what this sport is all about, isn't it? Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Byron King walking through his Derby Dozen, which you can find at bloodhorse.com, or Robert Falcone talking about the efforts that were made by the folks at Belmont Park this past week to rescue 58 horses from that barn fire that broke out in barn 60. You can go back to the website. You can listen to those interviews at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. You can do that after I finish up this morning at 11 o'clock Eastern. Well, Ken McPeak is with me now. He begins a busy second half of the program that also includes Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez coming up at 9:25 Eastern. Kenny, I was just talking about the showdown between Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy Girl. And earlier I said it's kind of like an athlete that goes into a big game, and almost like a Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady type of scenario. You've got the young upcoming star, you've got the proven champion, and now you get a chance to see who's best on the big stage.
Yeah, it's exciting. We're looking forward to the challenge. I mean, we've got such a special filly to be around, and keep saying, you know, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And, it's a good time to line them up. I think I know my filly's doing exceptionally well, and Oakland staged a huge event here, and it's good for everybody.
I thought Swiss Skydiver's comeback race in the Beholder Mile was, I mean, it was visually impressive, but it had to be everything you were hoping to see from her as a four-year-old.
Well, she's gotten bigger and stronger. She got a couple of months off after the end of her three-year-old season. You know, she came out of Breeders' Cup with a pretty good cut on her right front leg. She took all the hair off from the ankle all the way down to the hoof, and we needed probably 10 days to get that thing healed up. And then we sent her over to Dr. Bramwell. She did a full roundabout, and he said, you know, give her, if you want to have her all year next year, you ought to give her 60 days. And she put on weight, and not that she needed a whole lot more, but she's already big, strong filly, and she's bigger and stronger, and she matured the right way. She continues to amaze us.
Kenny, how cool is this sport? You have a horse in Swiss Skydiver that was purchased for $35,000. You have Monomoy Girl, who just sold after the Breeders' Cup for $9.5 million. And here we are, and Swiss Skydiver could very easily exit the Apple Blossom and be the leader in this division now. Awesome sport.
Yeah, you know, you got to relish these moments. It's not easy to do. And it's a very fragile position to be in. You know, there's an old saying with horses are like strawberries; they can go bad at any time. So we're fingers crossed that the journey continues, and she's just taken us to some amazing places, and just a real fortunate time.
You have had such success over your career with colts, and you know, certainly plenty of good ones, but really so many of the horses that have made it to the top of your list have been distaffers, and I'm just curious, is there a reason for that? Is there something about your program and your approach where you cultivate these young budding female stars to turn into outstanding older females as well?
You know, I guess the way I look at horses at auction, I buy a certain type, and if a horse has a certain hip on them or, you know, made a certain way, I don't know if there's rhyme or reason to that and why it's been more fillies than colts, but we're in a really, I guess, a good rhythm finding good fillies like that. And, you know, some of them have turned into good broodmares, trained the dam of some top horses that, some people probably don't even know, but it's fun. I mean, I enjoy doing it.
You know, it's been a long time since Monomoy Girl has tasted defeat. What's the, other than, of course, running faster than her, what's the key to being able to flip the script there and have Swiss Skydiver walk out of there as the leader in this division?
Well, the way we turn back authentic in the Preakness, I think, and I hope that it's that kind of race, that if she ranges up to us, that my filly can fight her off. You know, that's the ultimate challenge. And is my filly good enough to do that? Is his filly good enough to get past us? It's something we're all really looking forward to.
I love the fact that you have been very loyal to jockey Robbie Alborado. He doesn't ride nearly as much as he used to. At one point, he was regarded as, and he still is, a top jockey, but at one point, he really had it rolling. You have decided to stick with him through this whole process. It has paid off. It's a loyalty move, and kudos to you for sticking with Robbie.
Well, he's a top horseman. You know, people, you know, he's not at a top stage in his career right now because he's had a couple of injuries that kind of killed his business, to be honest. Plus, he's changed circuits, and that's hard. And plus, he lost his longtime agent, Lenny Pike, a few years ago. Unfortunate.
Yeah.
But Robbie's a top horseman. He knows horses. You don't have to give him in-depth instructions. And I also think he rides better in the bigger races than he does the smaller ones. And he contributes to our day-to-day in the stable. He gets on the young horses. He gets on some older horses. I mean, right now I'm working a lot with him and Brian Hernandez. And I don't know. I think the Cajun Runners are great. I've had a lot of luck with them. And long list of the stakes winners that I've had that were ridden by the Louisiana jocks.
Well, Swiss Skydiver is going to be in the headlines for you Saturday afternoon, no doubt. But Crafty Daddy goes in the Elkhorn at Keeneland. And I talked about the success you've had with the female horses. Here's a gelding in Crafty Daddy, and he has done pretty well, too. He's earned $374,000. He's won five races. Tell me more about Crafty Daddy in the Elkhorn.
Well, this is the horse that we got from Brad Cox's barn, from Lucky Seven Stable, the Mackens.
Yep.
And the horses fit in our program pretty good. I'm excited to try him in a mile and a half. I think the pace of that race is going to be interesting because I do think this horse can run all day. Ultimately, I'd like to go in the Elkhorn and then come back in the Louisville Handicap, a race I've won five times. And I think they made him 15-1 morning line, which that's pretty generous because he's got high level talent. He's just he's an unknown at this distance, but I think you're going to find out he's going to run big.
You know, from a program standpoint and a philosophical approach, Kenny, when you're getting a horse ready like Crafty Daddy to go long on the turf, and you're getting a filly ready to run at classic distances on the main track. Talk about the difference in the preparation process from a trainer's perspective.
Well, I think at the mile and a half, horses either can do it or they can't do it.
Yeah.
I learned a lesson in the Belmont. I ran in the Belmont in 99, and a horse named Pineff, who was a good, really pretty good horse. He won the Tampa Bay Derby. But I overtrained that horse for that race. And we tried to do too much. And I think the guy that said it best was Scotty Schulhofer. He said, either horse can do that or they can't. You know, if they have talent, they can win at a mile. We can win a mile. They can win 4.5 furlongs. I mean, Tahana Run, the first really good horse that I ever trained, won at 4.5, and he won at 1 1/8, and he was second in 1 1/4 in the Kentucky Derby. So good horses can do that. Is it how much different? I train my sprinters, milers a little bit. I don't gallop them as far. And then the further you gallop a horse, you probably, that's a little better way to prepare for the mile and a half, and they gallop a little further every day. But it is repetition, and still they have to have turn of foot. They have to be able to turn that quickness over when the running starts, whether it's a 4.5 or a mile and a half.
Visiting with trainer Ken McPeak here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kenny, let's fast forward to the Kentucky Oaks and talk about Crazy Beautiful for a minute. Your Gulfstream Park Oaks winner, she ran a monster race down there in Florida.
Yeah, really proud of her. You know, this filly seems to be maturing in the right direction. I was a little concerned about her last fall. She, you know, she kind of hit a wall against the top fillies, and she had a little issue that we were working on. She was forging and striking herself, and her front toes were hitting her hind ankles. And we seemed to have resolved that. We gave her a break also, a couple of months rest she had that brought her into her three-year-old year. And her Devona Dale was a good race, and her Gulfstream Oaks was a really great race. And I think Jose Ortiz, the way he rode her, contributed to her finishing, because she really hadn't finished in the mile and the 16th up to then. But she's got an outside chance in the Kentucky Oaks. So I think she's going to have to find another level. Can she? I think she can. Yeah.
Yeah, she certainly looks like she has plenty of talent. If she continues to improve, then certainly anything is possible. Simply Ravishing, probably not going to make the race, would you say?
Simply Ravishing was bred last night to Into Mischief.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to retire her. She's, I mean, nothing made, soundness-wise, no problem, but she's had a breathing issue that was probably going to require a layoff, and things just weren't falling in place, and didn't look like that was going to be, she didn't look like she was going to have a chance to run at the highest level like we'd hoped. Really freaky talented filly, and you know, she'll make a great broodmare. She you know, grade one winner, and you can't ever take that away from her.
I missed that news about her retiring, but what a great choice. What, I guess, first of all, if you're looking at a stallion, you couldn't have done much better than Into Mischief right now, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And we flirted around with Tappet, and we flirted around with Curlin, but ultimately decided on Into Mischief. And she'll probably be offered at the fall November sale at Fasig Tipton and Info, hopefully. And like I said, she got covered last night, and we're excited about that. That's, you know, it's unfortunate she can't run at 3 and 4 late in the season here, or, you know, but she's certainly high-level talent.
Why did Into Mischief get the nod over those other top stallions?
Well, it's hard to turn your nose up to him. I mean, he's really on a roll right now, and, you know, he's kind of sire of sires. And I thought physically she fit him really well, and also on the crosses or the nicks, he fit real well, and it was a kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, he's on a roll. Ken McPeak is on a roll, and he is looking to continue that roll with Swiss Skydiver and looking ahead to the Kentucky Oaks as well. Kenny, listen, appreciate the visit, my friend, as always, and good luck. Go get it done, and we'll talk soon.
Let's keep our fingers crossed King Fury draws in. If he doesn't, he goes to the Preakness.
Yeah, that's right, too. Yeah, you're kind of on the outside looking in there. But it's where does he sit on the number of points right now?
Oh, I think he's like – I think he's got to have two or three more scratches.
Okay.
But if he doesn't get in the Derby, he'll go to the Preakness.
Well, that fits, too. He's a good horse, and we'll see. All things are possible once you're in the starting gate, right?
Absolutely.
All right, brother. Appreciate the visit, Kenny.
All right, you're welcome.
Take care. Ken McPeak here on HRRN. Yeah, interesting. King Fury. See, now there's a horse that wasn't even really on my radar, thinking he's not getting into the Kentucky Derby. But if he gets a few more scratches, you know, who knows? And a matter of fact, I'm pulling up the latest leaderboard right now to see exactly where King Fury sits. He is in, 25th position. So he will need, a few more scratches if he's going to find his way into the starting gate. Also getting reports, I think, that Bob Baffert will run Hozier if he's able to get in. And he's sitting at 24. Just behind Get Her Number, Obesos at 22. At 21 is Dream Shake, according to the information that was sent out by Churchill Downs on Thursday of this week. So, interesting stuff. A lot of connections on pins and needles over the next couple of weeks. Number one, hoping that if you're in the starting gate already, that everything goes smoothly. You don't have a straw in your path. Every time the phone rings and it's your trainer, if you're the owner of that horse, you're taking a deep breath to make sure that everything is okay, that it's going to be a positive report, that the horse didn't spike a fever or anything like that. And, of course, if you're on the outside looking in and you think your horse has a chance if they get in, you're hoping, you're hoping. That's all you're doing at this point. All right, going to go ahead and get to another break. When I come back, it is time for this week's Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, and then I'll be joined by Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include The Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border Report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Just because opening day has been temporarily put on hold doesn't mean there aren't plenty of great storylines to follow in the days leading up to the kickoff of the 2021 Thoroughbred Meet. From horses on the Queen's Plate Trail to horses you'll want to keep tabs on ahead of the upcoming Woodbine season to catching up with Woodbine trainers, this weekly report keeps racing fans and the racing community in the loop. In this week's report, Hall of Fame trainer Mike Keough ready his stable for this season, and trainer Carlos Grant shares his thoughts on his Queen's Plate hopeful, Dursky. Mike Keough had a most memorable 2020 as the Canadian Triple Crown winning trainer was inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Keough enters this year with a stable of horses owned by the late Gus Chicken Dance that, for the very first time, did not winter in South Carolina due to the COVID-19 pandemic. His horses are thriving, he said, as they enjoyed a winter galloping around the big paddocks at Chicken Dance's Schaumburg, Ontario farm. The current king of the stable is Grade 2 stakes winner City Boy, who ended his 2020 campaign with close runner-up finishes in the Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes and Vice Regent Stakes. Trainer Carlos Grant continues to be optimistic about his Queen's Plate hopeful, Dursky, the three-year-old gelded son of Frack Daddy. He's actually doing very well, said Grant. He had a good winter. He stayed here with us. He started back training on January 18th. We were jogging him in the fields and the snow. He got turned out in the day, and then he would come right back in at night. And when asked about a possible start in the Queen's Plate on August 22nd, he said, I dream about it every day, every single minute. Racing in the plate would be a dream come true. We have to keep our fingers crossed. And that's your North of the Border report presented by Woodbine for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Built for Pleasure coming on now. It is Unbridled Song, Victory Speech. Built for Pleasure trying to post a huge upset in the Fountain of Youth. And Built for Pleasure has a short lead. Unbridled Song battling back bravely. Here's the line. Built for Pleasure wins 99-1. Is it possible? Unbridled Song was also right there at the end. Bob Dornan, president of the United States. Well, I don't know, but Built for Pleasure was the winner unofficially of the Fountain of Youth. The board says 99-1. That's the minimum price.
How about that? Tom Durkin with the call. A little flashback for you there. Fantastic call, too. The 1996 running of the Fountain of Youth. Built for Pleasure getting the victory. I believe, and I'll get you the exact price here in just a second, I believe Built for Pleasure was something like 144-1 that day when he pulled off that shocker in South Florida. Looking it up for you right now, actually. I'll get you the exact price because, as Tom said, the tote board only going to 99-1. Let's see. The Fountain of Youth came back with 7th in the Florida Derby, 7th in the Flamingo Stakes at Hialeah, and then the Kentucky Derby finished 19th. And the reason I wanted to bring you that clip was because of the fact that that was the very first mount in the Kentucky Derby for Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. He has ridden in the Kentucky Derby on 22 occasions. He has won 3 of those 22 starts. He has 2 runner-up finishes as well. John Velasquez is as good as it gets. The official price on Built for Pleasure, who, by the way, was not ridden by John Velasquez in that Fountain of Youth Stakes. It was Gary Boulanger. Built for Pleasure, 143-1 when he pulled off that shocker over Unbridled Song and Mike Smith in 1996. Fantastic stuff. And again, great call from Tom Durkin. Man, so many memorable moments when Tom Durkin was behind the microphone. There's no doubt about it. All right, it is time now, and I will visit with Johnny V, by the way, coming up in just a couple of moments, but time now for your Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. They're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All 3-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
The final 2 qualifying races for the Kentucky Derby took place last weekend with the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn and the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland. 170 points were on the line in the Arkansas Derby, and Bob Baffert's undefeated concert tour was the odds-on choice. He had just beaten many of his rivals handily 4 weeks prior in the Rebel Stakes and was looking to add to his impressive resume. He broke alertly and stalked the early pace of Caddo River, engaged him into the far turn, and took the lead in the stretch. But the mile and an eighth proved too much for him, and he started getting tired. Steve Asmussen's super stock was never far back and had plenty left in the lane to roll by the leaders to an impressive 2.5-length score. Caddo River never gave up and re-rallied to get the place over the tiring concert tour. At Keeneland, the track was sloppy, and Proxy and Swiftshore vied for favoritism in the Lexington. But it was the long shot King Fury who stormed home from well off the pace to get the win. He earned 20 points with the victory, which puts him 25th on the Kentucky Derby qualifying list. Trainer Kenny McPeak hopes they get in, but admits the Preakness is a likelier scenario. Speaking of points, here are the top 20 Kentucky Derby qualifiers. Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, Superstock, Like the King, Known Agenda, Rock Your World, Bourbonic, Medina Spirit, Concert Tour, Midnight Bourbon, Mandaloon, Caddo River, Highly Motivated, Helium, Soup and Sandwich, Dynamic One, Crowded Trade, Sainthood, Rombauer, and Hidden Stash. But there's a good chance both Crowded Trade and Rombauer will skip the Derby, allowing Dream Shake and Obesos to get in. Additionally, connections for both Caddo River and Concert Tour are still weighing their options, bringing horses like Get Her Number, Hosier, and King Fury into the mix. Stay tuned. I'll be back with this week's top 5 list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mattoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality. Undefeated, the two-year-old champ heads to Kentucky as the logical favorite. Number two, Known Agenda. Impressive winner of the Florida Derby. Number three, Highly Motivated. Gave Essential Quality all he could handle in the bluegrass and continues to improve. Number four is Rock Your World. He's an undefeated winner of the Santa Anita Derby. And number five, Mandaloon. Disappointed in the Louisiana Derby, but capable of much better. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Yeah, hard to believe. 14 days away from the Run for the Roses, and again, 13 days away from the Run for the Lilies. We'll be there all week long as your official radio home of the Kentucky Derby again this year. Very proud to be able to say that. We started in 2011, so 11 consecutive Kentucky Derbies now that you've heard on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and proud and privileged to partner with NBC Sports Audio Network to bring it to you again here in 2021. If you want to see a complete broadcast schedule for Derby Week and where you can listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network, just go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can see the schedule there. Again, keep all those responses coming to the poll question today at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. I was reading a text there, but we are just about set for Johnny V. He has texted me, said he's ready to go, so we'll get him on the line for you and get a chance to look back on some memories with Johnny V and look ahead to this year. He's going to ride Medina Spirit coming up in the Run for the Roses for Bob Baffert. He's been aboard Medina Spirit in each of his last two outings, the San Felipe and the Santa Anita Derby, respectively. He has been runner-up both times, so he'll have to find a way to turn the tables, but we'll ask him what he's feeling underneath him when he's aboard Medina Spirit and why he thinks that that horse can indeed pull off a victory in the Run for the Roses. Johnny knows how to do it as good as anybody. He is standing by. We'll get with him here in just a second for you. The poll question today. Share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Share your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. Could be a horse. Could be a wager that you won. It could be spending time with friends and family. Whatever it might be. Something that's special to you. Your favorite Kentucky Derby memory. I want to hear about it here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. A lot of things to look forward to with this year's Derby. A lot of storylines to cover. I told you last week when I interviewed John Sadler, the trainer of Santa Anita Derby winner Rock Your World, that the backstory there is so cool with Hall of Fame trainer Ron McAnally, his wife Deborah, two of the sweetest people you'll ever meet. They were the breeders, or are the breeders, of Rock Your World. The Dam Charm the Maker. A stakes-winning mare who was trained by Ron McAnally. The sire, Candy Ride, also trained by Ron McAnally. Ron and his wife, Deborah, who have been together 40-some-odd years, have their fingerprints all over this horse. Ron is 0-for-10 as a trainer in the Kentucky Derby. He has trained some of the greatest horses that we've seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He has never won the Kentucky Derby. Now he could win it as a breeder, and I think that is one of the fantastic storylines. How about the story surrounding Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen and his son Keith James? Superstock, who won the Arkansas Derby last weekend, gave his son Keith James... You remember how proud Steve was when he appeared on this program talking about Keith James becoming a jockey. gave his son his first stakes victory in the Texas Thoroughbred Futurity at Lone Star Park on August 11th of last year. His first stakes victory as a jockey. And now, after winning the Arkansas Derby Superstock, could give Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen his first Kentucky Derby win. So a horse that could take care of the son, take care of the father. Very special horse. And you can hear it in Steve's voice when he tells the story, when he talks about it, what this means to them, to the family. It's a cool story. That's another great storyline. And then, of course, you have Hot Rod Charlie and his story. And you heard from his connections. Just fantastic stuff. All right, well, again, efforting John Velasquez here. We are hoping to connect with Johnny V for just a few minutes. He is busy working at the track, no doubt about that, but we'll get a chance to connect with him coming up momentarily. Hopefully talk about Medina Spirit, look back on some of his memories of not just his three wins in the Kentucky Derby. Certainly those are memorable, including last year with Authentic, but look back on what it was like his first time he rode in the Kentucky Derby. And Johnny is indeed with us now here on HRRN. Johnny, appreciate a few minutes, my friend.
Thank you.
You know, I played a little soundbite earlier of Beautiful Pleasure winning the 1996 Fountain of Youth Stakes, upsetting Unbridled Song at 143-1. Beautiful, or Built for Pleasure, became your very first Kentucky Derby mount in 96. What do you remember about that day, my friend?
Well, actually, like you said, he was a long shot, and I was asked to come in and ride in the Derby, and it was incredible, you know, just to have my first mount in the Derby and get the experience from it. You know, coming out of the gate, I remember the instructions, you know, he's going to be quick, but I don't want you to go to the inside. So he broke on the lead, like, the first two, three jumps, and I stayed almost in the middle of the track going past the wire for the first time. And I got a few jockeys mad at me. You know, it was my first Derby, and I was just selling with all the instructions, and the horse broke so well, and I didn't want to go to the inside just because they told me not to be in inside. And coming back, I got yelled at by a few jockeys because asking what the heck I was doing. So that was my experience, and then my first Derby.
Unbelievable. And to look at where you are today, a three-time Derby winner, you look back on that experience, and you have to laugh about it, right? Because you just didn't know what to expect.
No, absolutely. And it was a great experience for me to be there just to ride the Derby. And but, yeah, it was a great experience. And then coming back and get yelled at, but, you know, to, I said, well, guys, I'm sorry. I just followed instructions. What do you want me to do? So, but, yeah, it was a great experience to be there and participate. And it was incredible, definitely.
Do you remember what it was like when you found out that you were going to have a mount in the Kentucky Derby?
No, absolutely. It's funny because Angel wasn't even, he was training. He wasn't even my agent then. You know, Angel was the one who called me, Angel Cordero. It's a lately thing. My friend of mine has a horse in the Kentucky Derby. He likes you to go and ride him. It's like, sure, you know. I mean, the sign was incredible. So he told me, it's like, man, it's a long shot, but it'll be great for you just to be there, be part of it, and have the experience for, just to be there. And so you can see, the whole atmosphere and what it's like to ride the Derby. And you get this, at least you get the experience to be there. I said, absolutely. You know, it was very excited, you know, just to, you know, give it the opportunity to go over here, to go to Kentucky and experience the Kentucky Derby the whole day. It was incredible, actually. Yeah.
Your fellow Hall of Famer Mike Smith told me that his first Kentucky Derby, it was the first time he had flown to ride a race, so he didn't know what to expect there. He didn't even know how to rent a car. He had to hop in a car with some other fans that were going to the racetrack and get a ride with them from the airport to Churchill Downs, and then he had no clue what to do when he got there. What was it like for you, Johnny, that the night before, the morning of, what were those moments like? Do you remember?
Absolutely, I was very excited. I mean, and I was here with my wife. The owner was really grateful, if you will, you know, that I was coming to ride his horse, and then he paid for me and my wife at the hotel and everything, and the car.
to come to Kentucky, and obviously from the hotel and to Churchill Downs. But it was pretty easy there. You know, it was more excitement than anything else for both of us being here, being young and getting the opportunity to be part of the whole Derby fiasco, if you will, you know, and excitement. You know, it was pretty easy for me, I have to tell you. You know, it wasn't all confusion and not know what where to go or anything. It's, I was traveling already, you know, in my early years, you know, being successful here and there, but I'd never driven the Derby before. So the travel part of coming here, it was pretty easy.
Did you receive any advice from veteran riders as to how to approach that week and that race?
No, there was no advice. What do you think they got yelled at me? They yelled at me when I came back. So they were frustrated with me. I was like, well, sorry. I mean, my first time, I'm only following instruction. You know, what do they want me to do? They were frustrated with me.
You know, you're a mentor to young riders now, and I know you spend a lot of time, you know, working with young riders. What would you tell a young rider that's going to be riding in the Derby for the first time?
I mean, the thing is about preparing yourself really, really well for this race more than anything else. Just, I mean, it's 20 horses. It's probably one of the roughest races to, you know, that you're going to ride, especially coming from that. It's a mile and a quarter, but, you know, everybody comes out running, try to get position. So, you know, be prepared for it, though. You know, you got to be prepared for yourself. So that first quarter of a mile, that is going to be pretty intense, just to everybody, you know, trying to guard the position that they want, and be aware of it, you know. So try to do your best to get the position you can and hold your position until you're comfortable with, you know. So that's probably the best advice you can give anybody, because anywhere in the world, I mean, a mile and a quarter, no one comes out running so quickly, you know, to get position. But, you know, most of the time when you go a mile and a quarter, people just come out of there as easily as possible. You know, they don't want to use the horses too much in the first part of the race. Where the Derby's complete opposite. Everybody's come out running to try to get their best position possible they can get.
Well, nobody prepares like Johnny V. I've said it multiple times on this program. I know how hard you work, Johnny, even to this day. You don't rest on your laurels. You continue to work your tail off, and you prepare impeccably for every race that you're going to ride. And that's why you're sitting here today as a three-time Kentucky Derby winner. How do you find a way to get Medina Spirit to the wire first this year? He's been second the two times you've been on him. What's the key?
Well, I think he's running really good races, and he has really, I mean, faced two horses that they streaked on those races. It's true. I mean, they went fast enough, and then they came back. Obviously, if that scenario happens in the Derby, there's going to be a lot of pace, and they go really quick, and that would be my benefit, you know, that he's going to be close enough, not too far enough, but there will be pace fast enough in front of us that they can come back to us, and maybe that would be the case that we can come down the lane and beat them all, though, you know. So I think it looks like it's going to be a lot of pace, and my hope that you know, that I get a good position and brace well the way he's been breaking from the gate last two starts, and get a really good position and watch him come back to me, though, you know. I hope they do.
Does he give you the feeling that he could be even better at a mile and a quarter?
You know, I think it's going to benefit him just because, like I was talking in, with that much pace, I mean, they should come back to me, and he can keep that momentum that he gets. He gets a good cruising speed. He just cannot accelerate again, if you will, down the lane. But he stays at the same speed the whole way around. And it's been tough, you know, for him to, you know, they keep coming and the horses in front keep running, though, you know. And like I said, the last two times he has run against two freak horses that, you know, they, you know, went to the lead and then never stopped. So, you know, I hope that changes in there. And the Kentucky Derby.
Well, Johnny, I would never bet against you, my friend. Go get number four. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know it's a busy time for you, and all the best.
Thank you very much.
All right, John Velasquez here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and safe trip to him and to all the riders who get a leg up, not just in the Kentucky Derby, but each and every day. Going to get to another break. I'll come back with this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. You won't want to miss it. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus after you bet $300 and $50 for every $5,000 wagered with code HRRN10 at KeenelandSelect.com or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Now, there's no doubt that this particular segment is one of my favorites. It was created to honor those individuals in our sport and to recognize those individuals that play such a critical role but rarely find themselves in the spotlight. And I have the privilege of doing that again today. Roy Smith is the track superintendent at Indiana Grand. And there are so many of you who may not even realize what it takes for a racetrack to put the show on each and every day. And one person that is critical to those efforts is the track superintendent, somebody who has the knowledge to keep not only the main track, but the turf course in great racing shape, in a shape that not only looks pretty on TV, but more importantly, is all about the safety of the horses and the human athletes as well. And Roy Smith is going to be with me here in just a second in this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Had a chance to talk to him on the phone a couple of days ago when I asked him to join me for this particular segment. And by the way, he was one of the finalists in the Godolphin Thoroughbred Industry Awards last year for the racing category, dedication to racing. And he didn't win that award, but I can tell you, as somebody who had the privilege of sitting in as a judge to determine who was going to win out of the three finalists and hearing the stories a couple of years ago, it's fantastic. All of them are winners, and Roy Smith certainly is as well. And we are efforting him now. We'll have him on this program momentarily as this week's Unsung Hero, presented by Claiborne. Yeah, track superintendents, I don't think, not that they don't get the respect that they deserve, but it seems like the only time we hear about a track superintendent is when things aren't going well at a racetrack. Right? The only time you hear about an offensive lineman in football is when they have a holding call or an offsides call. when they're doing their job and doing it well, you don't often hear about them. We don't talk about them very much. But when they make a mistake is when they end up in the limelight. When things aren't going well at the racetrack, that's when we tend to hear about track superintendents. But trust me, they are an integral part of the success of our sport. And Roy Smith is indeed with us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Roy, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, congratulations on being this week's unsung hero. And listen, this is something, this sport, I know that this is your job, but this is a lifelong passion for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm doing it. I was born into the business and didn't want to train horses, so I went into track maintenance, and I've been doing it 40-plus years. Started out in Boston at Suffolk Downs, went to Keystone, and then Philadelphia Park. Was there 31 years, and I've been here in Indiana Grand for 7 years. So, as track superintendent. So, it's.
Did you always think that at some point you were going to be? Did you always think at some point you'd be working on that side of the fence, or were you thinking you might end up on the trainer side of things at one point?
No, I did. My father was a trainer, and I didn't want to train horses, so. I was more interested in maintenance and always enjoyed, on the farm, always enjoyed growing things and watching things grow. So it was just maintenance was the typical. When I was a kid at the racetrack, when I'd go to the racetrack, I'd always hang with the maintenance guys and go check out what they were doing.
Really?
Riding in the water truck with one of the guys and just learning what they did. That's all. And I was interested in it from a young age. So
what does a track superintendent do?
When you boil it all down, it's all about a safe, consistent racing surface for both the human and equine animal that is involved in this and competes on this surface or surfaces, whether it be dirt, whether it be turf, whether it be synthetic, on a daily basis. You know, it's all about maintaining it at a safe surface for them to compete on.
What are some of the keys to doing that, Roy?
You got to eat, sleep, and live racetrack and track surfaces. Doing it as long as I have, you know, you make mistakes along the way, but you're supposed to learn by them. And you live it. That's all. It's, I don't know how to describe it, but I eat, sleep, and drink it. There's no doubt about that. You become a amateur weather person if there is such a thing. Because you pay attention as much to the weather as you do everything. It changes. I mean, with weather conditions and that, whether it be summertime or wintertime, it changes by the hour. It doesn't change by the day. It'll change by the hour. And you've got to be prepared to accept that and adjust to it accordingly.
So you're adjusting.
Smooth.
Yeah, you're adjusting even throughout a race card. It's not just adjusting the morning of or the night before. You're adjusting all the way through?
Yes, constantly. And usually, you know, if I can get through, the way I look at it, if I can get through the first four or five races and we're running smooth, now I'm already looking at tomorrow's weather and the day after that. Because now you are at the end of the race card, you're preparing for tomorrow's weather. So you've got to constantly be looking ahead at what the weather's going to bring you. I've had a weather service that I've dealt with for – I've always had a weather service that I can call up and talk to a meteorologist. If I can't understand what's coming or I've got a question on the type of weather that's coming, I can call up and talk to a meteorologist live and get that information. That's a big plus. And, you know, these are the things you have to do. to keep everything running smooth.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I never knew that a track superintendent would be in touch with meteorologists and you know, working to – I understand the weather plays a major role in the track conditions and the turf course and all of those things, but to be in contact with a meteorologist, I had no idea that that was something that a superintendent is doing as part of their job. What's – Roy, what's the goal, or I guess the one moment when you can finally sit back and say, yes, this dirt course, this turf course is perfect. It's exactly the way we wanted it and have been trying to get it. What's that look like for you, a perfect main track, a perfect turf course?
When I can stand on the rail and watch horses train and not hear them go by. That's the biggest plus going. Between feeling the racetrack on a daily basis and listening to the racetrack on a – and, again, you learn this over time. You're doing it as long as I have. You learn these things. I can listen to horses go over a racetrack and tell you more than any sets of papers are going to tell you. But
wow.
It's the same way with moisture. I mean, it's all key to moisture. Either it's too wet or too dry, but there's an optimum moisture we try and get on a daily basis. For racing, and you know, it's usually by looking at it I can figure that, but that's just me. A lot of it has to do with doing it as long as I've done it, but I test this material usually monthly. Every 4 weeks we're testing the material, the granulation size of the particles in the cushion, and this last test, when I sent it out, the guy that's testing, he said, "Where did you get this material?" I said, "I looked long and hard for it." And he couldn't believe it when he pulled it out of the sample bag. And when the numbers come back after we ran it through, and the numbers come back on the gradations, it was right on the money. And it felt that way. And so, you know, that's a big achievement when you can do that. And then when you got horsemen galloping their horses over it, training over it, racing over it, and they're all happy, that's a big plus. that's a tough thing to do. Because an old-timer told me a long time ago, anytime you think you've done something right, walk around the corner and someone's going to tell you how you screwed it up. So,
yeah, it's a great line, and it's so, so true. You know, we've experimented in our sport with so many different types of track surfaces, from, you know, Tapeta and all the different synthetic brands, and then, you know, a traditional dirt racing surface, and all the different things that we've tried. In your opinion, Roy, what's the best, safest racing surface?
In my book, you still can't beat the proper granulation side of a good sand cushion. With the proper amounts of silts and clays in it, you can't beat that. It's a natural environment for the horse. I mean, the synthetics, we're doctoring them up and everything, and there's all kinds of different things in it. And we're adding polymers to it and all kinds of cables and everything else, but and sand. But when you boil it all down, a good sand course with a good resilient cushion, you can't beat it. There's got to be
Roy,
a resilience in there for the horse. And when he or she can achieve that, they're going to go over it just as smooth as anything. And the same way with the grass course, too. I mean, you've got to have the proper foundation under it. If it's just like building a house, you've got to have a good foundation under your course. You can put the best material you've got on top of something and not have a good racetrack if you don't have a good foundation under that racetrack.
Well, Roy, I can tell you that you have done yeoman's work over the years, and I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me here this morning. It is so vital that people hear these stories and they get to know the people working behind the scenes like yourself. Congratulations on being this week's unsung hero, and keep up the wonderful work, Roy.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you. Good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. That's Roy Smith, who is the longtime track superintendent at Indiana Grand, before that Philadelphia Park, and fascinating stuff. Who knew? I had no idea that track superintendents were in contact with meteorologists constantly in their area to make sure that they have a handle on what weather is coming in, not just seeing what they see on TV or online. Fantastic stuff. Now, I'm going to get to another break. Don't forget, by the way, if you know somebody you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, whether it's a groom, an exercise rider, somebody that works behind the scenes, somebody at a farm, certainly too, a starting gate crew member maybe, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me. That's mike@horseracingradio.net. I will do my best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and months to come. That is mike@horseracingradio.net. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The Department of Veterans Affairs is so innovative, it not only improves the lives of veterans, it transforms the lives of healthcare professionals who serve them with access to the latest technologies and remarkable benefits. Transform your future at vacareers.va.gov.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal, which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit getvaccineanswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's getvaccineanswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Catholic boy. One of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
HRRN is your home for over 20 hours of Derby Week coverage, April 27th through May 1st. Leading up to our exclusive coverage of the 147th Run for the Roses, we'll bring you live coverage from Churchill Downs, including our Derby Countdown shows, presented by Hillendale Farms, our exclusive coverage of Kentucky Oaks 147, all the Kentucky Derby undercard races, and more. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of shows or to listen live.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You know, I've been telling you for a couple of months now about the brand new outdoor superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I had somebody comment to me last week that, oh, I know, you've got a few passions in life. They apparently were listening to the show, listening to this commercial, and they said, okay, we know it, we get it. You like the ponies, you like the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you like the outdoors. Well, I have spent my entire life with those three passions. I really have. And when I'm not at the track or sitting in Heinz Field or watching the Steelers somewhere, it's a pretty solid bet that I am in the woods. So trust me when I tell you that if you love hunting, if you love fishing, you need to check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. It's in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It's just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. It is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and the Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, whatever it is. And they even have two indoor archery ranges. So head over there today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. And when you go in, tell them you heard about it here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic people, fantastic selection. All right, Hour 3 is coming up shortly. It includes In the Room with Sean Clancy, a visit with Ramon Dominguez, Todd Pletcher at 1040 Eastern. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, and at horseracingradio.net. Time to pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Essential Quality is still driving at him from the outside, past the 16th pole. Highly motivated, Essential Quality, what a finish! The champ remains unbeaten, Essential Quality, to win it for Luis Saez.
It's Rock Your World in command, Medina Spirit making no progress, and it's going to be Rock Your World to take them all the way in the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby. He's undefeated and wins by four under Roberto Rispoli.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Known Agenda is now on to take over the lead. It's Known Agenda and Irad Ortiz Jr. now moving away from Soup and Sandwich, who's back to second. Then Greatest Honor and Nova Rags. 16th to go. It's Pletcher in the Derby again. It's Known Agenda for St. Elias Stable under Irad Ortiz Jr. 2.5 clear.
Superstock has taken over the lead. Concert Tour has been defeated. Superstock, Ricardo Santana win the Arkansas Derby.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour 3 rolling on. Very, very busy morning once again. 14 days, 6 hours, 43 minutes, and 41 seconds until the Run for the Roses. Saturday, May 1st, we will be there as your exclusive radio home. The only place you will hear the Kentucky Derby on radio is with us again this year on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That coverage in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports Audio Network, and really proud and privileged to be able to bring it your way. You'll also hear all the races on the Derby undercard. You will hear the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, 3 hours of Oaks coverage from 3 to 6 Eastern, and all the Derby lead-in shows that begin the Tuesday prior to the Kentucky Derby. Derby Week runs right here on HRRN. If you missed any portion of the first couple of hours of the show, my interview with Byron King from Blood Horse talking about his Derby Dozen. Robert Falcone, this week's Industry Star of the Week, looking back on the efforts made to help everyone, horses and humans, involved with the barn fire at Belmont Park. Ken McPeak was with me at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Johnny V, the Hall of Fame rider, was with me just a few minutes ago at 9:25. And then, of course, our unsung hero, presented by Claiborne, was Indiana Grand Track Superintendent Roy Smith, and some fascinating things coming out of that conversation with Roy. All of that will be available on podcast at horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts as well. Hour 3 begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy. A few weeks ago, he took time to sit down with retired Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez, and it is one of the more candid conversations I have heard with Ramon Dominguez since his retirement. We'll kick it off there shortly. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History comes up at 10:25 Eastern, and trainer Todd Pletcher will join me live at 10:40 Eastern time to look ahead to all of his contenders in the Derby and, oh, by the way, the Kentucky Oaks as well. But let's get right to it. It is In the Room with Sean Clancy, one-on-one with retired Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez.
Here comes Dominguez now. Here comes Dominguez now with Wet One. Wet One coming down to the line. Oh, what a day for Ramon Dominguez. What a day for Ramon Dominguez. He wins a record-tying sixth.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi,
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Ramon Dominguez. The 44-year-old multiple Eclipse Award-winning jockey won nearly 5,000 races, including the Travers, the Breeders' Cup Turf twice, the Arlington Million, the Woodward, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and Road Stars, Havre de Grace, Gio Ponti, Better Talk Now, and so many others. Welcome to the show, Ramon.
Thank you, Sean, for having me.
Now, I said jockey Ramon Dominguez at the introduction because you will always be a jockey in my book. You retired after suffering a head injury in 2013. How's retired life?
Retired life is good. I continue working on different things, just a new chapter in my life, and certainly was smiling when you said jockey.
Exactly. What keeps you busy these days? I know it's been almost 8 years, I guess, since you retired. What keeps you busy?
So, yes, busy with different things. I mean, personally, just still involved with things family-wise, enjoying family, and just enjoying also Saratoga, which is home for me now, Saratoga Springs. And I have been working on a couple projects, one of them a riding crop that I invented, and a lot of people know about it in the horse racing world. I'm doing also going into the other equestrian disciplines, and most recently started working with a friend on a platform that we named Exacta Box, which we, through that platform, we're looking to bring content to the Spanish-speaking horse racing fan, and that has been something that we have enjoyed, and just do an interview and pre and post race analysis, among other things. So, yeah, that keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah, you were always playing the long game, saving your money, thinking about your next step, right? I mean, you were always one of those guys you kind of watched that were – I was planning the rest of your life.
Yes, I am. Certainly, I'm happy with just living today and throughout my career. I didn't have to have the most expensive thing. So that certainly has helped through these retirement days where I am not making the money that I was making when I was riding. However, there is no huge needs in terms of having to fulfill something that was too big for my financial capability at the time. So nowadays, just enjoying life's simple pleasures in some ways.
Yeah, you've always been good at that. How tough was it to be forced to retire? I mean, you didn't really get your choice. You had a fall and had a dramatic brain injury. How tough was that for you?
So it was tough once that I came to realize that was going to happen for a while after my accident. When I had I was cognitively capable of thinking about what was happening and so on. I was planning on coming back, and that was pretty exciting for me to come back to riding. And then when I realized that was no longer a choice, you do go through what I call like a grieving period where, despite being your job or what you did as a career, you can help to feel in some ways attached to that, or as if that is part of who you are, even if that's not the case. So it was a little bit difficult walking away or separating myself from the fact that I was no longer going to ride races. But I kind of, with the support of my family, friends, and so on, and shortly afterwards, I ended up going to the track against my will, really, because my wife pushed me to go to the track, and that was the best thing that I could have done, because it really helped me to turn the page, and in no time I was able to enjoy the races and just looking at it from a different perspective without feeling a sense of loss, like, oh my gosh, I wish I was there. So as I said in the beginning of our conversation, it's just another chapter in my life, and I'm fully embracing it and enjoying it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I retired, I kind of now look back at it like that was a segment of my life. I enjoyed it. It was fun, but I've moved on, and I'm not that person anymore. I'm not really the it's almost like college. You look back and say, okay, that was my college life. Is that kind of how you look at riding races?
Well said. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly how I feel. Yep.
And I've had my share of concussions and suffered. I felt like I got better the further. I feel like I've gotten better the further away from those, kind of the concussions that I've had. Is that something that do you physically and mentally feel better as you've gotten further away from that injury?
I have been extremely blessed, and even the doctors who have seen me, from my neurologist to my neuropsychologist, they are blown away by how amazingly well I have progressed in my recovery overall. So at the same time, I mean, the main thing that forced my retirement, it wasn't whether I was capable of getting on a horse, is just the risk involved with me after so many head injuries, and the most recent one, or the latest one, certainly being at a totally different level. But nowadays, we know, science know, that 1 + 1 when it comes to head injury doesn't equal 2. It's something that is immensely greatly. And so for me to be exposed to even have a small head injury or a normal concussion was no longer going to be a normal concussion, and it was going to bring along some negative effects. So the doctor say, no, we cannot clear you. You cannot go back to riding. So that was my case.
Yeah, and that's pretty sobering, right, when they tell you that? I mean, they told me that. It's a big wake-up call when you kind of hear that.
It is, and it, of course, there are two ways to look at it, and actually both ways came into play, where one is cash. This is unfortunate. This is not good. Just not being able to ride races anymore, but at the same time, being responsible in terms of doing what the doctors said that I needed to do. Also allow me to kind of step back and look at it from a totally different perspective, in knowing that I'm lucky and that I'm lucky to follow their recommendation and be able to at least live a good life and not have to suffer the consequences of hitting my head again.
Definitely. And you've lived that good life since then. I mean, it seems like you've taken, I mean, I'm sure it was an adaptive period to kind of come to grips to it, but it seems like you're living a quality life now. And you always say, live in the moment and kind of, you know, enjoy today. And it's something that you've always kind of followed.
True. And of course, I mean, one thing that perhaps did my retirement or made it a little bit more difficult is the fact that professionally, I mean, it requires, as you know, a lot of time and a lot of effort and so many different obstacles to overcome to get to a point where you feel satisfied that you are accomplishing your goals. And that was the case with me, where I was living the highlight of my career. I was doing so well. And then, I mean, I guess my point is it would have probably been easier if, even if it wasn't by choice to retire, if I wasn't the downside of my career or my days as a jockey were kind of coming to an end, that you say, okay, well, I had a good career, but I was actually enjoying finally great success or great accomplishment given the work that I put prior to it. So having said that, again, I just count my blessings, and when I reflect back on my career, I do it while smiling and being blessed of all the great things that I was able to do and the people that I met and so on. And now definitely living the moment, but also enjoying this new chapter, and even simple stuff like going for a run, something that I enjoy very much, and things that perhaps before, even if I could do it, it was totally different. Going for a run before, it was with a plastic suit on and to lose weight, and nowadays I do it just for fun.
Now, Ramon, I'm just a guy who runs, okay? I mean, I'm a guy who runs, and you are a runner. I've seen you at the starts of the 5K. People say, did you run the 5K with Ramon? I go, well, I mean, we ran the same 5K, but I didn't run it with him. So you're very fast and very very dedicated to it. Is that something, I mean, was that something to kind of replace riding a little bit to really get motivated and kind of run like that?
I absolutely love it, and it's exactly what you said. In some ways, this has replaced the thrill of riding a race, because it's really, there are so many similarities. Like, I'm in the starting line for a 5K race, and my heart is beating so fast, almost like if I'm in the starting gate to ride the Kentucky Derby. And it's silly, but it's because I like it that much. And I would love to be able to put out that time and get better and get faster. I have been dealing with some injuries, actually, while running, just some stress fractures. And as it turned out, later on in life, I have developed, like, my bone density is not quite where it should be, something they call osteopenia, which is no osteoporosis. But so I had to kind of cut back and not run as many miles a week, and it's something that actually is hereditary, which my mom has it. So the good news is with men, it can be reversed, so I'm hoping that I can reverse it because I do like running that much. I absolutely could make a – I don't want to say a career out of it because I cannot live off running, but I certainly love the whole competition and the strategy behind it.
See, you're running too fast. I've been trying to tell you that. You got to slow down and get there, get in the back with us. With us, you know, us mortal people. What's your fastest 5K run time in your career?
The first one was last year. I ran a 17:05. So my goal will be to break into the 16s. Hopefully this year. So we'll see.
All right, I'll see you at the start, and I'll see you at the finish when you're you know, you've cooled down and had three glasses of water and you know, ate a few bananas. I'll see you then. I mean, jockeys live by the scales all day, every day. When was the last time you get on a scale? Is that something you think about anymore? I mean, you never think about your weight or worry about it. Must be a good feeling to not have to worry about it.
Yes, it is a great feeling, and I am nowadays, of course, I don't have to weigh myself. And however, I haven't really gained a lot of weight, and some people will see me and say, oh, my gosh, you're just lucky that you were built like that. And I do feel like if I would live a, quote-unquote, a normal life and just eat what I wanted when I wanted, I know that my body would look differently now. So it's just something that becomes a way of life. Nowadays, I mean, I can eat anything I want, but it's not even, I don't even think about it. When I'm going to eat something, I know what to eat and what not to eat. Like, I like a burger. I wouldn't eat a burger. I just, yeah, or pizza or anything like that. I just, I don't know. It's not even a conscious thought. It's just I will gravitate towards eating a salad. So, but it's great to, for example, one thing that was, because I was fortunate, although I'm tall, when I was riding, to I would lose weight daily, but it wasn't something drastic. But the one thing that did bother me is when I picked up the overnight and I saw that in 2 or 3 days I had a light mount, not to be able to drink as much water as I wanted at night. That did bother me because I would be thirsty after riding all day, and I had to really be careful about how much water I will drink, because the next day I had a light mount. So nowadays I can drink as much water as I want. So that's definitely something that I enjoy and I don't take for granted.
No doubt. I mean, that's what people don't probably understand when it comes to jockeys. It really comes down to water weight, and you have to really be careful just drinking that water. And you adopted kind of an unusual but obviously effective style. Almost, I always said you kind of hovered above the horse's center of balance. Was that natural or something you worked on? I mean, how did you develop that style?
So when I started riding in Venezuela, where I'm from, there was not a jockey school, so I learned from first at a couple of farms, and basically on my own, and it became something that I, just by learning on my own, I adopted some, let's just call it bad habits, just because I didn't know. And although sometimes people will be like, oh my gosh, the way you even swing to use the crop, or the way you look on a horse. And it was something that if I had a choice, I would have done it differently. I would have looked like somebody else that I know that looks much better than me. But it's that mentality of it's hard to teach an old dog a new trick. And after you have done it for so many years, it's very difficult to really change drastically, at least your style. So, but yes, my style was a product in terms of physically how I look or mechanically on a horse, just learning on my own and doing it over and over. But it was not the best way to do it. So in the other part of the style, they actually touch with the horse and the finesse and the listening to the horse. That also was a product of my own repetition, but also learning from my own mistakes and But it also has to do with my beginnings of really being around horses, which was in a show jumping. I did it for a year, and I learned so many great things. That was an amazing foundation for me, even as a jockey, just that touch and that communication with the horse.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, watching you ride, it was you had a real uncanny style. But you had the horses were very listening to the horses, that light finesse style, and it always seemed like horses were. You always kind of had them light on their feet. When you needed to make that move, you could make that move. You know, turning for home on the grass, you always kind of knew Ramon Dominguez, that horse. For you, who's the Mount Rushmore of jockeys? I mean, the best, you know, four or five, or you, the guys that you watched, emulated, you know, kind of tried to be like, guys out there that you grew up watching and riding against, who were they?
So there were so many. I mean, from back home when I first started riding, but then as I moved to the U.S., and I always said that I learned from any jockey and every jockey. If you ask me about a jockey, I can tell you what I learned from them, maybe good or maybe something that I'm like, well, I learned that I don't do this because this guy was doing it incorrectly. And here in the U.S., it is difficult for me. I cannot say only two or three jockeys because, again, I learned from all of them. I look up to so many of them. I'm a big fan of Jose Lescano. To me, is an amazing, and actually as well as he has done on the rated jockey, especially on the grass, he's amazing. I'm a big fan of Joel Rosario. To me, as a closer, he's incredible. And talking about that finesse and that touch and that communication with the horse, he has that to a T, where he's able to get those horses relaxed and then fly home. But just like I mentioned those two, I can talk about any and many of them that have an asset or a strength in certain area. And so I can pick and see so many great attributes some of them have in different ways. And that's great to be able to recognize and acknowledge that, because as you are riding, you can also try to emulate or try to follow certain things that they may do.
That's great. Exactly. You want to learn from all of them, different styles, and you try to learn from everybody. I'm going to borrow this question from one of my favorite podcasts, How I Built This. When you look back at your success, Ramon, how much of it was luck, and how much of it was hard work or talent? I mean, when you look back at your career.
So I was extremely fortunate. I mean, you can say, gosh, you were so lucky that, for example, that I had the agent that I have for the last 13 years, which without a question, he was an extremely key component of our accomplishments. Steve Rushing is just an incredible guy. So you can say, well, you were lucky to have him. But then if you unpeel the onion, so to speak, and go back to how I was able to connect or to start working with him, he didn't choose me because something in particular, because I look good on a horse or because anything. He actually did his work, and he asked around and about jockeys, and he realized that maybe I had what he was looking for in terms of the one thing that people don't talk about. Let's put aside the needed physical abilities. But equally important, your character, how you conduct yourself. You are somebody who's dedicated. You're somebody who's responsible. And I know that I had it. So when you look at it from that view, the so-called luck doesn't seem to be so much luck, but the fact that I put the work into it, I did things correctly. So, yes, not having said that, of course, things have to click into play. Place that I went once we got together, things started happening correctly. We started winning races. So, but I do feel like I also put the work in the things the way they were supposed to in order for things to flow correctly, if that makes sense. But even going back to the beginning of my career, and funny because I was part of a call yesterday with somebody with the Trouble Retirement Fund, and we spoke about this, that there was a key and pivotal moment when I was coming from the show jumping school to my house, taking a bus, which I had to take a couple buses, and a kid in the back of the bus called me because I had my helmet or my whip in my hand, and he asked me if I was a jockey, and I said no, and he said that he was riding race horses in a close by training center, and he told me where he was, and the next day I ended up going there, and that was my first time getting on a race horse. But it wasn't until recent, a few months ago, because we have remaining in contact. He's actually right now galloping in Japan. And he said to me, Ramon, I don't think that I ever told you why I was in that bus. And I said, I don't think so. And he said, well, I was in that bus because I was talking too much in class and the teacher told me to go home. So when you talk about luck or coincidence, I mean, what were the chances of that happening? Yes, that led to me going to the track and the rest is history.
Wow, what a story. They say, give yourself the opportunity to get lucky, and I guess that's kind of what you've done. You got lucky meeting him on that bus that day, but then you took advantage of that luck and built a stellar career on hard work and, I think what you said, dedication and being dedicated and being responsible, and that's I'd probably sum up watching you ride through the years, talent, dedication, and being responsible. And we miss you. We miss you. Miss watching you, that turning for home, revving that horse up, that hovering style. But we're sure glad you're still in the game and making a positive difference. Hopefully we will see you at Saratoga this summer.
Thank you. All right, John.
Great stuff from Ramon Dominguez. And I wanted to play that again because it was – so insightful, and Ramon so forthcoming with so many things, and a fantastic interview. And my thanks to Sean, my thanks to Ramon Dominguez. You can catch In the Room with Sean Clancy every single Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Equine Forum. When I come back, we'll stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. Then it's time for 2021 Hall of Fame nominee Todd Pletcher. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Zapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost! An overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's still 2.5 lengths back to Aubrey de Grasse. They're going to get past the three quarters in 1:11.4. And here they come into the stretch of the Apple Blossom Handicap. Joel Rosario sends Switch up to the outside of Absent Minded. And the two of them are heads apart for the lead. Aubrey de Grasse under the whip is third to another 2 lengths back. It's about 5 lengths further back to this match. Switch leads it. And now here comes Aubrey de Grasse picking him up. Leading him down on the outside. Aubrey de Grasse trying to run her way to a championship, and she's going to get it done in the Apple Blossom. Aubrey de Grasse, with the greatest win of her career, wins the Apple Blossom by three quarters over Switch. Absent Minded was third. Mismatch finished fourth, and Belle Watling was fifth.
Another great Ramon Dominguez moment. Aubrey de Grasse getting the victory in the Apple Blossom in 2011, 10-year anniversary of that memorable performance. She would go on to be voted Horse of the Year that year and has played an integral role in the history of thoroughbred racing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Terry Wallace, the late Terry Wallace with the call. Miss him. Miss his voice down there at Oaklawn. Just fantastic, fantastic stuff here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. And my thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, for queuing that one up. Just great stuff. Speaking of racing history, it is time to take yet another stroll through racing history with my good friend, Kurt Pecker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Pecker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Heemlich. He was born on April 17, 2006 in Maryland. He never raced until age 4, but by the time he was finished racing, he would have 32 wins and more than $2.6 million in earnings. And he would help land his trainer in racing's Hall of Fame. His name was Ben's Cat. A homebred for trainer King Leatherberry, Ben's Cat was a son of Parker Stormcat, a horse who won just once in 4 career starts, but who had shown an affinity for sprinting on the turf. Parker Stormcat was also a half-brother to the established young sire Malibu Moon, and for a stud fee of approximately $2,000, Leatherberry figured he was a bargain. Even Leatherberry probably had no idea just how big of a bargain that stud fee would prove to be. But at one time, King Leatherberry wasn't even certain that Ben's Cat would race, much less be a winner. That's because the horse suffered a broken pelvis as a 2-year-old and spent 6 months in the stall during the recovery. As a result, Ben's Cat never saw the starting gate until he was 4 years of age, but he quickly began making up for lost time. Ben's Cat made his career debut on May 8, 2010 at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore in a $20,000 maiden claiming race. By Thanksgiving, he had peeled off 8 wins in 8 starts and had graduated from claimers to win 3 consecutive stakes races. He had won on dirt, he had won on turf, he had given Leatherberry career victory number 6,300, and he was just getting started. As a 6-year-old in 2012, Ben's Cat would visit Parks Racing near Philadelphia on Labor Day as the defending champion in the Turf Monster Handicap at 5 furlongs. Despite heavy rains and a soggy turf course, Ben's Cat won again and reached the $1 million mark in career earnings. And still, he was not finished. 2 years later, by the end of 2014, Ben's Cat had won 28 of 45 career starts and had been named Outstanding Maryland Bred Turf Runner for 5 consecutive years, Outstanding State Bred Older Male for 4 straight years, and Top Sprinter in 4 of the last 5 seasons. He also had earned distinction as the Maryland Bred Horse of the Year, an unprecedented 4 times. But 2 of his most memorable performances were yet to come. The first would come at Pimlico on Preakness weekend in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint Stakes in May of 2015. Sent off the 2-1 favorite in a field of 10, Ben's Cat caught the attention of track announcer Dave Rodman in the final furlong.
Ben's Cat's got dead aim and staying straight. Here comes the Cat. Ben's Cat on the inside. But Bold Thunder's there and trying to hold up Ben's Cat. Bold Thunder, Ben's Cat willing. Here comes the Cat. Ben's Cat on the inside. Ben's Cat, can Ben's Cat do it? He's remarkable. He's Ben's Cat. He's the coolest cat around.
Ben's Cat, at 9 years of age, had won the Jim McKay Turf Sprint for the 3rd straight year and for the 4th time in the last 5 seasons. And 1 year later, now at age 10, Ben's Cat would defend his title in the Jim McKay and would do so with a breathtaking move in deep stretch.
Ben's Cat surging, surging late. Can Ben's Cat get there? Here comes the Cat. The Cat surges through. Oh, 2016 is the year of the Cat. He's 10. He's better than ever. And it's Ben's Cat in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. 5th Jim McKay Turf Sprint for the remarkable Ben's Cat.
Ben's Cat truly was better than ever that day, as it was one of the most brilliant efforts of his entire career. But that would also prove to be his final victory. He would go winless in his next 8 starts, prompting Leatherberry to retire the gelding at age 11 in June of 2017. Regrettably, Ben's Cat would become ill just a few days into his retirement. He would undergo surgery, but complications in the days afterward proved too much to overcome. Ben's Cat died on July 18, 2017. His ashes were interred 4 months later at Laurel Park, where he had scored 1/3 of his 32 career victories and 1/4 of his 26 lifetime stakes wins. Ben's Cat was a bona fide superstar in Maryland who also earned the respect of racing fans across the United States. And he helped land King Leatherberry in the Sports Hall of Fame, an honor which many believed was long overdue. We remember Ben's Cat, born 15 years ago today, on April 17, 2006. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Heemlich. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Oh, what a wonderful trip down memory lane. So many moments provided by Ben's Cat that are unforgettable to so many racing fans, not just in the state of Maryland, but around the country and around the world. And I can remember when King Leatherberry was inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2015. We used to broadcast the Hall of Fame inductions here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and that may have been the final year that we actually did it. And to sit there and listen to King Leatherberry just rattle off joke after joke after joke. I mean, this is who King Leatherberry is. He has a fantastic personality, and he got up there and just thanked everybody and had the place in stitches with all of the different jokes that he was telling in his induction speech. It was different. It was true King Leatherberry, and it was fantastic. 6,506 career wins to his credit for the King Leatherberry, including the great Ben's Cat. And my thanks to Kurt Becker for that stroll through racing history, to Keeneland, to Lane Zen for making those segments possible each and every week. You'll catch a new one next Saturday morning here on the Equine Forum. And wonderful stuff, and happy birthday to Ben's Cat on this Saturday morning. When I come back, you'll hear from a man who may soon be making a Hall of Fame induction speech in Saratoga Springs. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
He let loose in a stride, and the colt charges to the lead of the 200. Hallel's coming down the outside, and then came Captivon, but Animo's well clear. Hallel and Captivon fight out second and third, but a cozy victory in the English side for Animo. McDonald eased him right down for a three-length win from Hallel.
Animo, the son of Darley Stallion Street Boss, rolled home impressively from off the pace to score in the Grade 1 Sires' Produce Stakes in Australia this past weekend. He now goes for the Grade 1 Champagne Stakes at Randwick on April 24th, and he is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss is the fastest son of the Great Street Cry. Animo's victory in the Grade 1 Sires' Produce Stakes gave Street Boss his eighth Grade 1 winner worldwide. Learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public by visiting SantaAnita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, and fans are asked to please wear your masks and to socially distance upon arrival. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at SantaAnita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's First.com/bet. Join us in person or online this Saturday, as our main event is the Grade 2 $200,000 Californian for older horses at a Milam 1/8. On Sunday, older horses will go a marathon Milam 1/2 in the Grade 3 Tokyo City Cup, and top sprinters will go 6.5 furlongs in the Grade 3 Kona Gold. First post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at SantaAnita.com/live.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the field turns for home. Melbourne's Thomas has the lead. Super Saver down in there. Prince Daddy's in front. Super Saver, Calvin Burrell. 1 furlong from the Derby here. Melbourne's Thomas runs in second. Paddy O'Connell is now third. McMusic from the Big Bunch at now fourth on the outside. And they're coming down to the finish. And it is Super Saver. A late run from Icebox. But it's Super Saver and Calvin Burrell.
Tom Durkin with the call. Super Saver in 2010, giving Todd Fletcher his very first win in the Kentucky Derby. He would go on to take it again in 2017 with Always Dreaming, and this year has several chances to add a third Derby victory to his resume. That resume very well could, and in my opinion, should land Todd Fletcher in the Hall of Fame later this year in Saratoga Springs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If you ever wanted a more sure thing as a first ballot Hall of Famer, I don't think you'll find it anywhere other than Todd Fletcher. You won't find a better candidate for sure, and he is going to be with me here momentarily here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Looking forward to that visit coming up shortly. Of course, I mentioned that he will have four horses, at least four horses, in this year's Kentucky Derby, led by Florida Derby winner Known Agenda, and Todd is indeed with me now here on HRRN. Todd, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. I was just referencing the fact that you very well could find yourself putting on that Hall of Fame jacket and making a speech in Saratoga later this year. How cool would that be, man?
You know, it's really, really special recognition for our whole team. Really, you know, is the way I look at it. So many people would have contributed, and, you know, just to be nominated is you know, a special feeling. So if it actually happens, be delighted.
I was talking with Ron Nicoletti from Gulfstream Park on this show a few weeks ago after you were officially nominated, and I told him it would be an Arkong-like upset if you're not a first-ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know if you look at yourself that way, Todd, but the body of work you have put together, in my opinion, deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You deserve a plaque in there. There's no doubt about it. What do you remember about getting the news that you were going to be nominated?
I knew that some people had told me that this year, you know, was the year that I became eligible. So, you know, we were kind of aware of it, but, you know, it's still when you see it actually come out, and it sort of gives you a moment to pause and reflect and, you know, appreciate all the opportunities you've gotten over the years and all the great horses that have made it happen. And then you kind of think, wow, where did that 25 years go? You know, it's really flies by quickly. And, you know, sometimes when you reach some of these milestones, it kind of gives you a moment to kind of pause and reflect, which is hard to do in this business. And really makes you kind of appreciate just, you know, everything.
Do you view yourself as a Hall of Fame trainer, Todd?
To be honest with you, I've never really thought about, you know, I've never thought in those terms. And, you know, and people ask, you know, is that a goal that you set for yourself when you started out? And I can honestly tell you, no, I never dreamt that I could have the career that you know, we've been able to have so far. And so I never really set that as a goal, and not to sound corny, but, you know, I mean, literally our goal each day is to come in and do the best job we can with each and every horse and that we can possibly do. And I think if you try to stay focused on doing that, then hopefully the results follow.
Well, yeah, you do things the right way, you treat people the right way, and eventually all of the accolades follow that success. And let's hope that it happens for you coming up in just a couple of weeks when those announcements are officially made. I was talking earlier about the fact that when Super Saver gave you your first Derby win in 2010, and we just heard Tom Durkin's call a short time ago coming out of the commercial break, that it has to be awful nice now not to show up at the Kentucky Derby and answer questions about being 0 for 24 or whatever that number was going into 2010.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was one of those things that was, you know, sort of, it was adding up quickly. And, you know, when you're having multiple starters over the years, you know, the number was getting high, and that was the obvious question that I was having to answer every time that we showed up. And, you know, so look, I wanted to win the Kentucky Derby more than anything, just because it's the race that everyone wants to win. But, you know, in some ways I don't think I was feeling it as much as, you know, the story was itself. So, but it was great to have it happen. And, you know, in 2010, and it's certainly kind of that narrative no longer we have to talk about. And, you know, by being fortunate enough to win it again in 2017, I feel like, you know, now we can say we didn't get lucky once. We were able to do it twice. And, you know, and just it's always exciting to be back to try again.
Yeah, what do they say? If you do it once, you must be lucky. If you do it twice, you must be good. And there's no doubt that you've got a handle on this thing now. And looking to add a third win to that resume in the Kentucky Derby later this year, 2 weeks from today. I would almost spin that the other way, Todd. I know 0 for 24 was the narrative, and that's the negative side of it. But to get 24 horses into the starting gate in a Kentucky Derby in itself is a massive accomplishment and a huge feather in your cap. It's not easy to get a horse to the Derby.
No, no, it's not. And I mean, I think you can certainly appreciate that. And, you know, even we're, 2 weeks out now and you still come in and on pins and needles every day and hoping that everyone stays healthy and continues to train well. And so those are things that you always have to be concerned about, right up to the last second. So, I feel like, you know, we have been able to do a good job of getting horses to the Derby. And then also, I think, you know, one of the other things that we're proud of is that not only is getting them to the Derby, but we've had a lot of success with horses after they've run in the Derby. So hopefully we can continue that trend.
Yeah, I referenced that earlier. Vino Rosso, for example, winning the Breeders' Cup Classic, just another horse that continued to get better throughout the year and become a good older horse, too. Let's talk about the four potential horses that you have in here. There could be more, but I think four is a solid number, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but we'll start with Known Agenda. This is the sixth time that you will saddle four or more horses in the Kentucky Derby, maybe even the seventh time, actually, if I go back and look at it, but it's pretty impressive, Todd. Known Agenda, Florida Derby winner. Boy, did he run a big race back on March 27th.
He really did, and I mean, he's a perfect example of a horse that just seems to be getting good at the right time and has just improved. His last two starts, especially with the addition of Winkers, seem to have really made a difference in his early race focus and just kind of seemed to be the turning point that kind of got his head in the game and moving in the right direction. But I thought his Florida Derby was the race that we'd always felt like he had in him, and you know, it was great to see him deliver that performance and come out of it in good shape. And we're excited about the fact that he's always given us the impression that a mile and a quarter is right in his wheelhouse.
What led you to make the decision to add Blinkers a couple starts ago?
Well, actually, it was John Velasquez who wrote him in the Sam Davis, and you know, we had had it in our minds that he's a little bit of a lazy colt and somewhat unfocused, but we were hoping he'd kind of start to figure things out, and he was improved in his training. But Johnny, when he wrote him in the Sam Davis, he said, "Yeah, I think you need to put some Blinkers on this horse. I just couldn't get him into the race early on." And so we worked him in Blinkers. He worked well, and then he certainly has improved in his two races with him.
You know, 24 winners, Derby winners, have come from the Florida Derby. That's the most of any prep race in the history of the sport. Your last winner, Always Dreaming, prepped in the Florida Derby. Why has that been such a productive prep race historically?
Well, you know, I think if you go way back, it's for different reasons. And I think partly it's just because so many of the best East Coast-based horses and even Midwest horses in some cases have used Florida as their winter headquarters. So, but I think what's really made a difference over the last, maybe going back to Barbaro, is the 5 weeks that it's scheduled 5 weeks before the Kentucky Derby, and to me that's perfect timing. Gives you plenty of time after a big performance like that, and you've got enough room for three works. And so I think the scheduling of it in recent years is a big reason for its success.
Talking with 2021 Hall of Fame nominated trainer Todd Pletcher here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, let's talk about a couple of the others. That Wood Memorial, Bourbonic, 72-1 upset. I guess you always knew you had that one in the bag, huh?
Yeah, I tell you, I give all the credit to Mr. Kelly and Kelly Max. know, he's game and loves being a part of the Kentucky Derby when they have the opportunity. So he's always willing to take a shot and, you know, seldomly give us any real orders or any real requests. But he said, if you don't mind, can you take a shot with Bourbonic in a race with Derby points? And so, you know, the horse is based in New York, and the Wood Memorial seemed like a logical place to try it. And it's one of those situations where everything fell into place. Kendrick Carmouche gave him a terrific ride and rode him patiently and made one way run, and, you know, he finished up with good energy. So it's a great example of you can't win if you're not in there trying.
Yeah, was there anything that you were seeing from Bourbonic before the Wood Memorial that gave you any hope that he could pull off a shocker like that?
Well, he's a horse that's actually breezed pretty well at times, and the one thing we did feel confident about was that he was going to improve going a mile and an eighth, and he's always kind of a horse that gave us that impression. We just never quite had the opportunity. The one time we'd run him two turns was at Parks in a mile race, and so this was his first chance to get around two turns going a mile and an eighth, and we did feel that was going to help him.
It helped them in a big way. When you win the Wood Memorial with a 72-1 shot, that's wonderful. When you get the exacta and your horse that runs second is 15-1, I think you're just showing off, man.
Yeah, I mean, now Dynamic One is sort of a different example. I mean, he's a horse that has always trained exceptionally well, and you know, we were getting a little frustrated that he didn't win his first three starts, and his debut went completely, literally sideways at the start when he brushed the side of the gate. And then we ran into Greatest Honor in a maiden race from a bad post position at Gulfstream, and probably made the mistake of running him back again at Gulfstream a mile and 16th from a bad post position. So, you know, in our eyes, he was the best three-start maiden, you know, in the country. And so when we went to Aqueduct and was able to break his maiden, we felt like we were getting back on track. And then, you know, he ran a huge race in the Wood. He's still kind of figuring things out. And I think when he made the lead, he got to wandering around a little bit, and Bourbonic surprised him quickly at the end. But I like the way the horse is coming around. And like I said, it's one that we've always been impressed with in the mornings.
Yeah, an impressive yearling, too. The $725,000 yearling purchase, so Dynamic One was always highly regarded. Your last of the quartet would be Sainthood, a son of Emshuish, who you know very, very well. Tell me a little bit more about Sainthood.
Well, he's an improving horse, and, you know, he's done a little wrong in his three starts. He's second on debut, just missed a tight photo, and went to New Orleans to break his maiden. And, you know, we're just kind of looking for a logical place for him. And like you said, being a son of Emshuish, who was a grade one winner on turf and dirt, we felt like maybe this horse would like the synthetic. And ran a big race in the Jeff Ruby. He just got in a little bit of traffic. He kind of had to alter course and was finishing best of all. But, you know, he's a little light on experience, but we like the way he's been training. And know what appears could be kind of a wide open year, you never know.
Well, let's spend just a moment or two, Todd, before I let you go, talking about the Kentucky Oaks, and I guess one filly pointed for that race, the undefeated Ashland winner Malathat, who looks like she could just be any kind, but saddling one horse in a big race like that, that's almost like a day off for you, isn't it?
I tell you, we're really excited about this filly and always have been. We're just fortunate enough to train her dam, Dreaming of Julia, and this filly was special as a yearling. And just, she's such a delight to train. She's so push button, so much class, and just a great filly to be around. And you know, she's to go for 4 for 4 in her first four starts is just a credit to how much talent she has.
And she's talented, her trainer is talented, and the team surrounding her is talented. Todd, listen, I got to get to another commercial break, but I really appreciate the visit here this morning. All the best with the Oaks, the Derby, and all the best with that Hall of Fame, man.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much. Todd Pletcher, always classy, does such a great job and always very generous with his time. Really appreciate the visit here this morning. One last break. I'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go. Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go. Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Caraconti standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
COVID-19 has changed how we live and how we feel. We show up differently, worship differently, and have found new ways to express our love and support to family and friends. But now there are vaccines, and they are the first step that lets us get back into the things we miss most, like spreading the word without spreading concern, girls tripping instead of solo sipping, brunching instead of late night munching, and talking smack with a side of mac and cheese. It's okay to have questions about COVID-19 vaccines.
Should I get it?
Should I wait?
Is it safe?
Can I trust it?
What about pre-existing conditions?
Now get the facts. Visit getvaccineanswers.org so you can make an informed decision when COVID-19 vaccines are available to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
HRRN is proud to bring you the Derby Countdown, Tuesday through Thursday morning during Derby Week at Churchill Downs. Bobby Newman and Jude Feld will broadcast live from trackside and bring you interviews with trainers, jockeys, owners, and other racing insiders. Plus, keep you informed with up-to-the-minute news leading up to the Kentucky Derby. The Derby Countdown, presented by Hillendale Farms, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, April 27th through the 30th. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, the new Blood Horse Plus is now available through bloodhorse.com. It provides exclusive, timely, and unmatched content to subscribers, including Fox Sports and Blood Horse branded weekly program showcasing the thoroughbred industry's upcoming races and recapping recent stakes races, a daily detailed stakes winners section, weekly multimedia interactive shows, behind-the-scenes videos, on-demand access to deeper horse statistics, Blood Horse Market Watch, and monthly credit on equineline.com, and so much more. That's the new Blood Horse Plus on bloodhorse.com. Take a look today and see what you have been missing. Well, my thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible here today, including Byron King from Blood Horse, talking about his Derby Dozen, Robert Falcone, our industry star of the week. Ken McPeak was here in hour number two, as was Hall of Famer John Velasquez. Hour three featured that interview with Ramon Dominguez, and of course, Todd Pletcher just a few moments ago previewing his Derby and his Oaks contenders. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. That also includes All of our trainer talk shows on Wednesdays, which are presented by Fasig Tipton, our call-in shows presented by Briss, and the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts, which previews all the big stakes races coming up over the course of the weekend. You can head back and check out those podcasts on our website as well, horseracingradio.net. My thanks to all of you who took time to weigh in on our question of the day, sharing your favorite Kentucky Derby memories. So many of you taking time to do that. Really do appreciate it. Keep them coming. Let's keep that going throughout the day. Would be an awful lot of fun. Head over to our website to check out our complete Derby Week schedule. It kicks off on Tuesday, April 27th. Should be a lot of fun to be there in the Ville once again, getting the band back together here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. What a ride. 14 days until the Run for the Roses, 13 days until the Run for the Lilies. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, who is in our Lexington studios, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. By the way, we talked about this being the day that Ben's cat was foaled. Ruffian also foaled on this very day, April 17th. That was at Claiborne Farm. Appreciate you listening. Talk to you next week. I'm Mike Pena. Go Steelers!